Vladimir Putin dies, or as he put it, perishes. Understandable maybe, but is this the sort of thing a statesman says? Also, we keep being told Ukraine is in retreat and losing territory to Russia, but it's emerged that Ukraine has retaken the town of Kupiansk. It's a humiliation for Russia, but is it proof of Ukrainian resilience or just a straw in the wind? At 11, the US has launched attacks on Christian killing ISIS terrorists in Nigeria. About time or a dangerous move? And at 12, do you have a phobia? And what do you do to fight it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Two men are still missing off the Devon coast after reports swimmers got into difficulty on Christmas Day. Devon and Cornwall police are asking people not to swim in the sea today after yesterday's search in Budley Salterton, which emergency crews have now ended. LBC's Southwest correspondent Andy Ballantyne has more.
It's after emergency services were called to Budley Salterton following reports that a group of people had got into difficulty. A number of people were safely recovered to shore and checked by paramedics at the scene. One was taken to hospital as a precaution. Three lifeboats, helicopters and an aeroplane spent the rest of the day searching for the men, but nothing was found.
A number of so-called Islamic State fighters have been killed in US airstrikes in Nigeria. Donald Trump says they were in response to the vicious killing of Christians by what he calls ISIS terrorist scum. Ukraine's president says he's held an hour-long conversation with US negotiators about ending the Russia-Ukraine war. Vladimir Zelensky says he held really good discussions with officials on Christmas Day. The Kremlin says it's taking a look at the latest proposals from the US-backed peace plan. The cold weather is continuing into Boxing Day with a yellow health alert in place for parts of the southwest of England. The low temperatures mean it's more likely vulnerable people will need the NHS. The warning runs until tomorrow afternoon. And the average spend in the Boxing Day sales is predicted to be around £250, but research shows fewer people are expected to take part in the sale period compared to last year, with overall spending thought to be down on 12 months ago. Retail consultant Andy Sumpters told LBC the tradition of the Boxing Day sales is still an important one for many.
Things, of course, have changed. So there's a lot of shopping online, but there's still a lot of click and collect. There's also still a lot of people are wanting the immediacy of retail. So, you know, you go out and you pick that item up there in the moment. But the other thing is the kind of the validation of what you're purchasing. So, you know, you're going to buy the right size, particularly in clothing. And also people want to see that it's the, you know, the right kind of product that they've been looking for.
LBC weather, a mostly dry Boxing Day with sunny spells, cloudier in central and southwestern areas. Another chilly day, though, with highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
It can feel like you're part of a Christmas movie when you're a winner like Hannah.
Geek Young and Tom's story had a happily ever after too.
We never for a second thought this would be the house that we win.
Now our next Christmas grand prize winner could be you when you enter the Omaze £1 Million house draw. Because one person is guaranteed to win our enchanting house in the Lake District worth £4.5 million. So visit omaze.co.uk by midnight tonight. Last month, Alistair and his family won their dream house.
Just so excited for the future for our family.
Now you could be next. And the best part? You'll be supporting RSPCA.
So for your chance to win our enchanting house in the Lake District, along with £250,000 in cash, you must enter by midnight tonight at omaze.co.uk. That's omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million guaranteed donation to charity.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good Boxing Day morning to you. It's 4 minutes past 10 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 1. Now, I'd like to tell you that we were going to repeat the silliness of yesterday's programme, but sadly I can't, because we're not. Although we are going to talk about, I think, quite an interesting subject at 12, which I'm not sure it would be described as silliness, but phobias, because I think we all probably have a few phobias. The first text I see on my screen when I walk in is from someone who says, yes, Ian, my phobia is you. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. On the other hand, Joe says, yay, Ian Dale, very happy Boxing Day. So someone's pleased to see me. Oh, hear me. So we're going to do that at 12. I have a bit of a phobia about rats, which I'm hesitant to talk about a lot at midday, frankly, because that's when people might be sitting down for their Boxing Day lunch. But yeah, rats just give me the ick. And also, nowadays, in my ancient years, I have a phobia of falling over. Because when you're diagnosed with osteoporosis, you realise that if you fall, you're probably going to break a bone. So I suppose that counts as a phobia, doesn't it? Anyway, we want to hear about your phobias, the weirder the better, after midday. But before then, I want to talk at 11 about the fact that Donald Trump has launched attacks on ISIS in Nigeria because they've been going around slaughtering Christians. So I want to hear your views on that. But first, let's talk about Ukraine, because there have been quite a few developments in Ukraine over the past, couple of days, really. First of all, President Putin has according to the Daily Mail, he suffered a stinging humiliation on Christmas Day as Ukraine took full control of the town of Kupiansk. Now, this is quite interesting, because we talked about Ukraine on my evening show a week, 10 days ago, and the general consensus among some of the callers was that Ukraine was going to lose this war because it's retreating and Russia was gaining ground. Well, this is a very interesting development, because the Russians had gained control of Kupiansk and now they've lost it again. And I think that is always humiliating in a war situation where you take territory and then you lose it. So the Ukrainians will take great heart from that. Then also the other development was in President Zelensky's Christmas message. And he said, and I suppose it depends on how you translate this, but it's been translated as saying that he hopes President Putin dies in 2026. Now, I completely understand that. Some people have translated it as he hopes he perishes. Well, it amounts to the same thing, doesn't it? But I wonder whether you think that's the sort of thing that a statesman should say, even against somebody who's killed hundreds of thousands of their own countrymen. I was sort of thinking about this on the drive-in this morning. Obviously, I had to drive in because no trains. And I thought, well, would I say that? And I'm thinking, well, going back to the Second World War, did Churchill ever say that he hoped Hitler died? I mean, you could understand it if he did, but I don't actually think that he did. And I'm not sure this is actually going to make people think better of President Zelensky. And to me, he's one of the heroic figures of the last, few years, really. I think he hasn't really put a foot wrong in this war. He's kept his nation together. He's encouraged and persuaded many doubting foreign leaders to stump up billions of pounds to support his war effort. And I'm not sure whether language like this really helps his cause. What do you think 2026 has in store for President Zelensky and Ukraine? 0345 6060 973. Well, let's talk to John Sweeney, investigative journalist and author of Killer in the Kremlin, the explosive account of Putin's reign of terror. John, very good morning to you. First of all, let's start on these comments from Zelensky. What do you make of them?
By the way, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all your listeners. I have a phobia of Vladimir Putin. Not like rats, but Putin himself. However, I think it was wrong of Zelensky, the wrong tone, to say he'd like to see him perish or die or killed off or whatever. By the way, I have a regular sign-off to my video diaries on Twitter, which is even ruder, but I'm not a president. And I think that Zelensky has been absolutely brilliant from the, day one of the big war in February 22, when he said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. Mm. So this is a rare moment, Ian, where I think Zelensky's words have come out wrong. It's the wrong thing to say, because it sounds as though Zelensky's not interested in peace, and that isn't true. He wants peace, but he wants a lasting peace, not to sign up to a deal where the Russians sort of move forward, and then, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 6 months later, Putin says, you know what, I think I'm going to invade Ukraine all over again. He's done this two times already. So I think it was wrong of Zelensky to use that language. He is an extraordinary man. There's lots of criticisms of him, and in certainly his close circle, there's questions about corruption. But remember, Ukraine is a democracy. It's Ukrainian journalists that have been breaking these stories. Ukrainian anti-corruption agencies that have been pushing all this stuff out. So Zelensky's, I mean, if I was marking his card, I'd give him 9 out of 10 for being a war leader. This is a rare moment where his language is wrong.
Now, Kupiansk, not a place I've ever heard of. I don't know if that's very familiar with you, but Ukraine have retaken that town, and it does seem to be a bit of a humiliation for Russia, given that they had taken it and various decisions have meant that Ukraine's been allowed to retake it.
Yes, so Kupiansk, I've been there once in October 22, when the Russians were on the kind of far side of town. It's a town divided by a river, and the Ukrainians blew up the bridge to make it impossible for the Russians to get over. So what's striking is, 3 years on, the Russians, just before Christmas, announced that they'd taken Kupiansk, and this was not just the Russians, this was Putin himself saying this. And then, a couple of days before Christmas, there was Zelensky, guess where, in Kupiansk. And that shows a couple of things. One of which is that again and again and again, Zelensky has shown his courage as a war leader. Like Churchill, every now and then Churchill went close to the front line. Actually, Zelensky goes pretty close to the front line. There he is in Kupiansk. So who's right? Is it Putin or is it Zelensky? Well, it's Zelensky, folks. And by the way, you know, the big picture for all of us, including the clot in the White House, Donald Trump, this is a great argument for liberal democracy with a small L and a small D. Because in liberal democracies, the news organizations tell the truth. And Russia has got it wrong. So the Kupiansk story tells you, one, that actually Ukraine is still able to launch counter-offensives. It's still able to keep the Russian army out of its towns and cities when it's focused. It's done that in Kupiansk. But the second big thing is that there is a world of a difference between the information, the quality of information that Zelensky gets in Ukraine and that Vladimir Putin gets in the Kremlin, because everybody like you, Ian, and me in Russia, who's any good at their job, has been shot or fallen out of a window or drink the wrong kind of tea.
All a coincidence.
No, it's not, mate.
I know it isn't.
No. I know you're hungover and I know it's Christmas. Well, I certainly know I am. But it's a very, very simple thing. And I like to sit down with everybody who thinks that it's some kind of fascist state, the Chinese dictatorship or the Russian dictatorship or the Iranian dictatorship, you know, is the model that we should embrace. And it seems like Donald Trump is one of those people. You're wrong. Because in a liberal democracy, you get bad news, but you get honest news. And that happened during the Second World War. And my old organization, the BBC, often, you know, it's a human organization that makes mistakes. But by and large, the BBC told the British people the truth about the Second World War, while the Nazi regime didn't. And we've all seen downfall. We've all seen that great clip where Hitler is finally told by his jellyfish generals, no, there is no Sixth Army, you know, we're screwed. And he goes nuts. But that's what happens to dictators. It does not happen to people in democracies from the leader down, because there is honest news. And also, you and I and all our colleagues can do our job without fear of fear of being murdered.
Do you think Putin is being told the truth by his generals? Because several callers into the programme regularly, and we've got Nick in Ilford coming on in a moment, who always phones in about Ukraine and tries to mask it, but generally gives the sort of Russian line. He will no doubt tell me that the Ukrainians are destined to lose because they're losing hundreds of thousands of men and the Russians are continually taking territory. What is the truth there, and is Putin being told the truth?
So, Nikki, when were you last in Ukraine? Have you been to Kupiansk? Have you been to Bakhmut? I was in Bakhmut 7 times in 22. Now, the Russians have got that. So I understand what's happening. The Russians are slowly moving west. They are moving, but they're moving extremely slowly. And Ukraine is an enormous country. And actually, the big picture is 3 years on after the start of the big war, the Russians can't even get Kupiansk, never mind Kyiv. And by the way, they're something like 200 miles apart. The big picture is, I know, because I was in Ukraine in early November, actually celebrating a gay wedding in. And I was the paperwork will be signed in London. It was two English friends, but they got married in Kyiv, or the celebration. And I was the celebrant with my silly orange hat.
Goodness me. This is conjuring up an image for me.
Yeah, I'll stick it up on Twitter. But at John Sweeney Royal, the highlight of the year, and the one of the grooms said, none of this could happen were it not for the Ukrainian army defending us, defending our right to do what we wanted to do today. And that's part of it. So the reason why the Ukrainians are fighting is they're fighting for their land, they're fighting for their freedom, and they're fighting for their future. A future outside the Soviet shadow, outside Stalin's shadow. Whereas what Putin has done is dragged Russia back into that hellish nightmare. So I would say that Nikki is a fantasist and a fool. And that if you don't go to Ukraine and you don't understand just how determined the Ukrainians are to fight, exhausting and terrible as the war is. I mean, I've met a soldier who got blown up, I think, by artillery in Bakhmut, who lost both arms and a leg. And Ukrainians have got this amazing technology where they drill a hole in the amputation, and then they put sensors, and it takes time, but it's much, much more, the fancy way of doing this is connecting the prosthetic, the false arm, to wires in the brain, but that's expensive. You do it in the arm, you can do it for a tenth of the cost, and therefore you can get 10 soldiers some mobility. And this wonderful guy, I said, what would you say to Putin? And he held up his hand. I don't know if you can see this, 5 fingers. And he said, wait, these are black plastic fingers, because it takes a while for the thing to go.
With one finger. I can see you on the screen, John, but our listeners can't. But he's doing a very rude gesture there, ladies and gentlemen. Uncharacteristic of John, I would say. But
Indeed. However... I always try and be polite, unless you're a member of the Church of Scientology. However, Ian, that is the Ukrainian fighting spirit. And for people like Nikki and Donald Trump and the Kremlin's useful idiot, Steve Witkoff, to say that Ukrainians have got no cards, well, go to Kupiansk. Go to Kupiansk. Go to Kyiv. Hang out in Kyiv, and you know, go to the lovely bars there, hang out with soldiers who've come from the front line for some R&R, listen to them talk about what it's like fighting for their future and their kids, and they are not going to give in. So the story is grim. We're not doing enough in the West to defend the Ukrainians, to help them defend themselves. There are far too many Russians hanging around in the flesh pots of Europe and all of that. Too many Europeans are still buying Russian oil and gas, and too many British insurance companies are insuring these things, da-da-da-da-da, all of that. But the big picture is Ukraine is still fighting. 3 years on, the Russians haven't been able to do it. And if everybody saw the King's Christmas message, you know, that beautiful bit where the final carol is a Ukrainian carol. Yeah. The Ukrainians are not giving in.
John, always good to talk to you. I imagine you'll be going back to Ukraine in the next couple of months. So we'll talk to you again then. Thank you very much for joining us here on Boxing Day. Hope you've had a great Christmas. That's John Sweeney there, investigative journalist and author of Killer in the Kremlin, The Explosive Account of Putin's Reign of terror. So two questions. Where do you think we are in the Russia-Ukraine war? On the face of it, the fact that the Ukrainians have taken this town back, Kupiansk, I mean, that is a good thing from their point of view. But is it just a straw in the wind? And what do you make of Zelensky's comments that he hopes Putin dies in 2026? Is that the remark of a statesman? Is it the remark of somebody who is just speaking for his nation? Because I can't imagine there are many Ukrainians who would disagree with the sentiment. 0345 6060 973. You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 19 minutes past 10.
LBC.
This is my car.
Well, I saw it first.
I sat in it first.
You horrible man.
Ow!
At Harwoods, we think January sales should be civilised. That's why there's money off every new and approved used car until the 11th of January. Simply stroll to Harwoods Jaguar and Land Rover Crawley and Brighton, Harwoods Volvo Crawley, or Harwoods Audi Five Oaks and Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. The civilised January sale at Harwoods.
Love, it's a strange thing. It can start with a single look. Your heart races, you think about it all the time, you can't get enough, and who could blame you, really? Once you've tasted a beautiful European cheese, there's no going back. With over 1,500 French cheeses to choose from, there's always a new one to fall in love with. Have a French love affair. Europe, cheese at heart. Co-funded by the European Union.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
The next sale. At least 50% off all next sale items. Starts in store Saturday from 6 a.m. Check stores for opening times while stocks last.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones. Like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy while stocks last. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes past 10 on LBC. Well, a phone-in about Ukraine and Russia would not be complete without Nick in Ilford, and he's obliged yet again. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Ian. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I've got to say, I enjoyed your show yesterday.
You didn't phone in, though, did you?
No, I was listening, but I thought it was really sweet. I don't know. You obviously got a regular call this. She was an old girl, and hearing you getting upset was quite emotional, actually.
Yeah, Constance in Woking. I mean, what a wonderful
woman.
It was
lovely. Especially the bit at the end. Lovely woman.
She'll be listening to today as well, I'm sure.
Oh,
so,
that's good.
So,
that's
Nick,
good.
Go on. Hit me with it.
Right, so as far as Zelensky, it's unusual for him to make a statement like that. He's normally very careful with his words. I call it a bit of an act of desperation because he knows he's got problems. I don't think it's helped him, especially as from what I know, and I could be wrong, but it was reported a long time ago, there has been an agreement by the Russians not to attack or try to kill Zelensky as the leader. So to make a statement like that, particularly when Ukraine is hitting parts of Russia quite hard with long-range missiles at the moment, it might be a bit dangerous.
Well, Richard says, Putin has people actively trying to assassinate Zelensky.
No, that's not true.
Well, it is true. Zelensky expressing a desire for Putin to perish is a perfectly acceptable response. I mean, that sounds fairly logical to me.
No, it's not true. It is actually an agreement for them not to try and kill
Zelensky. An agreement between who?
Between Russia and Ukraine, and I would assume that the Europeans
Sorry,
as well.
What's the evidence of this?
It's something I read reported a long time ago.
What, in Russia today?
Well, I'm not being funny, Ian. I mean, you just had John Sweeney on that reports an absolute load of rubbish. I follow him and watch what he does. And he's literally a propagandist. And he's good at making
unlike
his own.
You.
If you're not, Well, no, but he makes his argument. If you're not in Ukraine, you can't do your own research. You can't have any idea what you're talking about. A lot of people made the same argument with what was going on in Israel, and that negates any kind of opinion that you
What's the one thing that John Sweeney said? And he was on for about 12 minutes. I don't recall anything that he said that you could contest.
The only thing he said that it was true is that he went to that that marriage of the two gay guys.
What did he say that was untrue?
Everything. There was literally nothing he said that it was true.
Well, give me an example.
Kupiansk.
Yeah.
So Ukraine hasn't taken Kupiansk.
It has.
It's what you read. I follow these things.
No. It's not what I've read. It is fact. I mean, otherwise Zelensky wouldn't have been able to take a picture of himself there, would he?
I can explain all that to you if you want. Okay, so large parts of Kupiansk have been taken back by the Ukrainians. That is true. Okay, but the way they did it was by putting troops off the front line in Sumy and Sversk. They lost Sversk during that attack. In the Sumy region, the Russians have taken a lot of land because of the lack of troops on the ground. As far as that picture, the video, that was completely debunked within days when video emerged of not only that land, about a month before that video was taken, where all the drone netting was down and the sign was completely and utterly damaged, but also by Ukrainian troops that were shooting their own video. And this is on Ukrainian channels that backed up the fact that was damaged. So that video had been taken a good few months earlier and was completely debunked within days.
What, by your Russian propaganda sources that you fall for hook, line, and sinker every time?
But the problem is, Ian, is you think I only follow the Russian side, and I really don't. I follow both sides. I follow what are called war matters.
Why do you only ever give the Russian side, then?
Because, to be honest with you, there's no good news for the Ukrainians at the moment. There really isn't.
Clearly, from all the reports I've read on this, and these are universal, they're not just sort of in one newspaper, and the reason that the Ukrainians were able to take back this town was because the Russians made an error and they withdrew their troops to put them elsewhere. Now, that sounds completely plausible, doesn't it?
Well, but not true. It was the other way round. I mean, you just answered
If it was the other way round, then Russia would still hold the whole of Kupiansk, and it doesn't.
Listen, Ian, you just said that you've read from multiple newspapers that this is true. The problem is you're making the mistake you accuse me of only following the Russian side. You've got to do your own research and get out there and look properly at the people that are mapping this. Okay, and it's really important to do that, because I'm not saying the Russians don't lie. They do. I see it all the time, which is why
So why do you only ever give their point of view? Because that's what... Whenever we do this subject, you know full well that my text screen here is full of people saying, oh, well, let's hear from the Russian apologist Nick in Ilford, and they think you only ever give the Russian side. So if you're trying to make out that you're very equidistant, you're not.
Well, no, what I give you is the information that I see. From all the Russian sources. Well, it's not just Russian sources, but tell me where the Ukrainians... So it's good that the Ukrainians, I can agree with you, they've pushed into Kupiansk. They haven't taken it, though. But what I'm also telling you is the reason...
Every reputable news organisation says they have, and I'm going to trust them rather than you.
And if you read those news organisations, they don't talk about anything that the Russians have done. So let me ask you a question. Do you know anything about what's happening in Odessa at the moment?
No.
Because it hasn't been reported. But it's a big story. The Russians have absolutely flattened Odessa. The reason Odessa is important is it's got two bridges that the Ukrainians used to bring supplies in from Romania. They are now struggling because they can't get those supplies in. That hasn't been reported. It's an important story. What's happening now is the Ukrainians are now strengthening Odessa with troops and air defences to stop that happening. So that's a story you haven't heard because it hasn't been reported in the Western media.
No, I haven't heard it, but frankly, You have a track record of only giving one side of the story, and I'm going to believe all of the other sources that I've read this morning over what you've said, because you only seem to get your news, in inverted commas, from Russian sources.
No, but it's not Russian sources. Where are you getting it from, then?
You're not getting it from Ukrainian sources.
A lot of my information comes from what are called war mappers, and it's war mappers, independents, and there's also people on both sides. And what they do, they literally map the war and report the war every day. And what you do, you look at these various sources and you see what lines up and you see what doesn't line up. The big Russian one is a war mapper called Deep State. They get a lot of their information directly from on the ground through telegram channels and various sources. This is on both sides and the independents in the middle. And what you do is you take a look at the information you get and you say, well, what lines up? What doesn't make sense? You use your common sense, and if you follow it closely, like I do, you can work out what's true and what's not true.
Let me go back to what you said at the beginning, where you said that there's some agreement between Russia and Ukraine that Russia is not going to assassinate Zelensky. Right from the start, they were trying to assassinate Zelensky, weren't they?
Not as far as I'm aware.
There is actually evidence that they were, which I remember seeing.
I've
seen it in various documentaries. There was a three-part documentary about Zelensky, which he took part in, and there was bits about it in that. So if you were saying to me, well, that this agreement has been reached in the last few months, but nobody knows about it, I might have cause to maybe even possibly believe what you were saying. But if you're genuinely saying to me that that the Russians have not been trying to assassinate Zelensky at all ever since the beginning of the conflict, I know you're a liar.
Well, I'm not a liar. I'm only saying to you what I've seen a report quite a long time ago. It could be more than a year that there is an agreement that they won't attack Zelensky. The same as when European politicians go into places like Kyiv, they're not attacked. The people from the West aren't attacked. You see people from the West in Ukraine all the time. There's never been an attack. Don't you think that's a bit strange when Russia can actually attack Kyiv?
Russia has been attacking Kyiv. We've seen the pictures of various blocks of flats being attacked.
Ian, that's my point. They do, but they haven't attacked any Western leaders or Western politicians. They've been ignored while they've been in the country. And they
I agree with that, because can you imagine what would happen if the Russians launched an attack on Kyiv and killed Keir Starmer? Can you imagine the consequences of that? So
they feel safe enough to go into these areas. There must be some kinds of agreements in place.
So you've backtracked now. Before you told me there was an agreement in place, and now you're saying there must be. Well, that's very, very different.
European politicians. There must be an agreement in place.
This is whataboutery. We're talking about Zelensky, and you said right at the beginning of the conversation, and people can scroll back on Global Player and listen to what you said, there's an agreement in place between Russia and Ukraine not to assassinate Zelensky.
There is. That's correct.
Well, you have no evidence for that whatsoever.
Well, you've got no evidence that there is.
I've got the evidence that they have tried to assassinate him in the past.
Well, where's the evidence?
I've told you.
I'll ask you the same question as you are. No, you're referring to various documentaries and various statements that have come out of Russia. Okay. Very pro-Ukrainian.
Well, we know that's never going to be you, don't we, Nick?
Well, I'll be pro-Ukrainian if there were...
The moment that Ukraine surrenders to Russia.
No, Ian, listen, I agreed with you before, a long time ago. Russia should not have gone into Ukraine. There would have been other ways to do it. They should not have done it.
Okay, well, let me ask you crucial question then. Do you want Ukraine to win this war? Exactly. Goodbye. Thank you very much, Nick. 10:33, news headlines with David Dong.
Devon and Cornwall police have urged people to avoid coastal swimming after two people went missing on Christmas Day. The search for them has concluded last night after emergency crews were called to the beach at Budley Salterton yesterday morning. The US is warning of more to come after claiming to have carried out powerful strikes on the so-called Islamic State targets in Nigeria. Donald Trump says he ordered them after attacks on Christians. And reports in the US suggest Ukraine Ukraine's president will meet with Donald Trump over the weekend. Volodymyr Zelensky says he held positive discussions with US officials yesterday about ending the Russia-Ukraine war. LBC weather, a mostly dry Boxing Day with sunny spells, cloudier in central and southwestern areas. Another chilly day with highs of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional, who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
But that makes gold. Then earns points on obscure vintage football shirts. And cheesy chips before the match. And on tickets to the game. And you can put those points towards the cab home when they lose 4-0. And that's because Amex Gold lets you earn points on what you love and what you don't, to spend on things you like.
Representative 86.3% APR variable. Annual fee applies after the first year. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
Same.
Ho, ho, ho!
Same.
3, 2, 1, hey!
Same.
Whoa, thanks.
Same.
What does Santa call his dog?
Same. Same.
One word. Free syllables.
Same. Same.
Sorry, it's a bit dry.
New plates.
Ooh.
Treat your table to something different this Christmas. Visit your local IKEA now. IKEA, the wonderful every day.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own world. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
10:36. I'm now going to read you some of the texts that have come in. In fact, I'm going to read you them in the order that they've come in from the most recent one. I'm not selecting them at all. So let's start with this one from Colin, who says, Nick is a fool about Zelensky not being a Kremlin target. Only this month, an Irish Navy ship... is there such a thing? Spotted up to 5 drones operating near the flight path of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is from Brendan. I realise it's kind of good radio, but I'm uncomfortable that the oxygen of publicity is serving to give this Burke from Ilford a platform. He doesn't deserve it. Plus, it could be doing more harm than good. That's an interesting point, Brendan, because I've wrestled with this over the last 3 years as to whether we should be giving people with pro-Russian views a platform on LBC. Now, each presenter will have their own view. I do it because people need to know that these people walk among us. That, and I'm not accusing Nick of this, but there are others that have phoned into the radio station that I'm convinced are in the pay of Russia. There are others that, that they always sound so plausible, don't they? I mean, Nick, on the face of it, normally when he comes on, and okay, at the end of that, I think we kind of understood exactly what his views are, but that they tend to be very plausible callers. And it is up to me and other presenters to call them out. Sheila Fogarty does a brilliant job of doing it, I have to say, and others do too. So, but I don't think censorship is the way forward here. I think if we pretend these people don't exist and just don't let them on air, I'm not sure that actually furthers any cause at all. Lots and lots of others coming in here. Really, Ian, you couldn't let me answer that last question properly, Nick. No, because you went silent. And that's why I was very, very indicative, because all it took was for you to say, yes, I do want Ukraine to win. And you couldn't even do that because you don't, Nick. That's the problem. 0345 6060 973. Let's return to the subject of whether President Zelensky was right to say that he hopes Vladimir Putin dies. You can understand it from an emotional point of view, and I doubt whether there's a single Ukrainian that wouldn't wish that. It's never nice to say that you hope another human being dies, but we are talking about Vladimir Putin here. Beryl's in Wisbeach. Hello, Beryl.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. President Zelensky saying that, I can fully understand why he said that. You know, when you go and listen to some of the things the Russians have said, you know, you go to Anton Krasnovsky when he said to drown all Ukrainian children in a river. You know, Viktor Yushchenko, they tried to poison him with Agent Orange. I mean, you know, a Ukrainian journalist, absolutely tortured, had her eye removed and part of her brain removed by the Russians and then sent back in a black body bag. These are just a few of the things.
Yeah, and also the 20,000 children that Russia has kidnapped
from Ukraine. Yeah.
And yet people like Nick, and I don't want to put words into his mouth because maybe he hasn't said this, but others of his nature have. They say it hasn't happened. And there is documentary evidence for it.
Yeah. I mean, everything I say, I've got documentary evidence of everything. I can point to every channel, every documentary and everything that's been done. I mean, at the moment, 20,000, some of those children have actually now been sent to North Korea. I mean, God help them. Wow. God help them. I mean, and what they're doing in the Donbass area, they've got no water there now. There's shortage of water and in Crimea. And what they're doing, they are actually sending the people from Donbass, they're sending them to Siberia, resettling them while they send in Russians from the Russians, you know, in parts of Russia. Just as they did in Finland, Lithuania, all those countries there, what they do, they take out the indigenous people of the country, send them to the east into the gulags and filtrate in Russians. It's absolutely despicable what's going on. As for the Kupiansk, which is actually in the Kharkiv region, what Nick's saying is a load of bull. But let me tell you, Ukraine is doing really, really well. They were stopped for 7 months by Mike Johnson in the USA from getting weapons.
Mm.
And they were also, by Pete Hegseth, stopped in Kursk but from getting information, so they had to pull back from there. They've had no favours from the West, a lot of the West, not all. And what they're actually doing now, the Ukraine, is absolutely brilliant, because they were previously stopped. You can't fire missiles this far. You can't hit those targets. You can't hit those targets. Well, I think Ukraine, and I definitely know that, they've had enough of that nonsense. So they're now hitting platforms in the Black Sea, in the Caspian Sea, taking out their oil production. They're hitting tankers. They hit one in the Mediterranean.
I think this is absolutely justified, but you'll get some people who say, oh no, they should stick to fighting Russia within the borders of Ukraine. Well, Russia didn't respect Ukraine's borders, did it?
No,
and if you're at war, you take every opportunity you can to hit back at the enemy.
Yeah. Well, Ukraine's had enough of that now, and they have two fingers up to the West, and they are just going after the Russians hard, and they are hitting them really, really hard. And Russia is absolutely struggling. I mean, Nuvalina, the head of the Russian bank, was actually called into an emergency meeting into the Kremlin and all the high finance people. Russia's economy is doing extremely bad. Workers haven't been paid for months and months, and they're starting to strike now. They're starting to crumble in Russia. But whether they'll crumble enough, I can't answer that. Nobody knows the future. But I tell you what, those people in Russia, they have been oppressed and persecuted for years. They don't know how to speak out. You know, when these Russian soldiers are captured by the Ukrainians and you listen to the interviews, they're clueless. They say, yeah, that it's wrong, but then they don't know an answer to it. It's as if they've lost the brain power to be able to assimilate what is, you know, the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
Beryl, you are the perfect antidote to Nick, and you always have backup for what you say. And thank you very much indeed for your call, and a happy Christmas to you. Now, a bit of breaking news. President Zelensky has revealed that he plans to meet Donald Trump very soon. He says sensitive issues, including compromises on territory, should be discussed with heads of state. He's described as really good an hour-long phone conversation he had yesterday with US negotiators about how to end the war with Russia. Mike says, I'm an adventurous Brit who went to Odessa last month as a tourist. No city damage then, but the BBC do report a few hits this week. I went to the Opera House and we were all evacuated to a basement due to air raid warnings and a signed and I don't know what that means. A pianist entertained us down there. Great resilient spirit. So whatever information Nick had on Odessa seems to be disproved by that. Michael's in Kentish Town. Hello, Michael.
Hello, morning, Nick. Good, Merry Christmas and all. Hi, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. I called just to say that Ukraine did take Kupiansk back, but the question is will they keep it? You know, will they be able to keep Kupiansk? There's been lots of towns that Ukraine and Russia have taken and retaken over the course of the past 3 years. And will they keep it, or is this just a pub?
No one knows, do they? That's the whole point on that whole area, sort of around the Kharkiv area in the Donbass. Bits of territory go one way and then they go the other. There is effective stalemate, as I understand it, along most of that stretch of the river.
Yes. There is an effective stalemate. There is a couple of noteworthy points over the past 3 years that have happened. One is the Ukrainian summer offensive, and the question is, Nick, in June of 2023, Ukraine published their military plans and their military objectives, and the question is, why did they do that? Because it only intensified their defeat. So I don't understand. Is this a question of optics or hyperbole? So is Ukraine
what,
really
what defeat?
They publicized their military plans on TikTok, there's this thing called Maskarova, which is called disguise. Maskarova, and the Russians disguised. They hid their artillery position. They hid away from their artillery positions. The Ukrainian bombarded their trenches, sent troops in to find that there were no Russians there. The Russians were 100 yards away behind in bushes. Their artillery was literally in bushes, and they artilleryed the Ukrainians. And this happened repeatedly. And the question is why did they publicize their plans?
Well, I can't verify what you said there. The fact is that there is stalemate. And as you said at the beginning, I mean, that they've taken Kupiansk. Who knows, in 2 months' time, the Russians may take it. I've got absolutely no idea. But the main point is that over the 3 years, Russia has not taken territory in the major part of Ukraine. And they thought they would be able to take the whole country within about 3 days. Well, the Ukrainians fought back, and we all know what's happened since then. And so, inevitably, in any war, in the First World War, this happened. One side made an advance. A few weeks later, the other did. And so it goes on, and there's effective stalemate at the moment.
Yeah, it's effective stalemate, but there's a few tactical things. The question is, there was a town called Krinky that was on the river that separate, you know, that river that goes through Ukraine. There was a town called Krinky, and Ukrainians suffered very, very heavy casualties in Krinky. And the question is why did they concentrate on this town that was of no strategic importance? And you could argue that some of the towns were Bakhmut, Avdiivka. Ukraine lost these towns and suffered huge losses. And the question is, why didn't the, I think there's a few questions of tactics and strategy that need to be examined here, because
What about all the Russian tactics and strategy, which don't seem to have worked?
They don't seem to have worked, but the Russians are able to replenish their losses better than Ukraine than Ukraine is.
Why haven't they made massive advances then? If they are so rich in personnel, why haven't they made the advances that they thought they would be able to make right at the beginning? And here we are, 3 years on, for nearly 4 years on.
Yeah, well, they're taking their time doing it.
Right.
I mean, they are. But the thing is, the question is. the question is, some of the intense disasters that Ukraine has fought. The Russians did this. But there are some questions about the command structure of the Ukrainian army.
Well,
I mean,
I'm sure there are. There are in any war. I mean, all armies come under scrutiny, and sometimes they get things right, sometimes they don't. But it's very interesting and very illustrative, Michael, that again, all you talk about are Ukrainian failures, and you're never comfortable about talking about the Russian ones. But hey-ho, it's free country so far. 10:48.
I'm James O'Brien. Thank you for listening to me on LBC throughout the year.
The independent sentencing review is good enough for everybody else, but what do you use instead?
Personal experience, lived experience. Listen, if they're the facts, but from my lived experience...
They're the facts, but I know better.
They don't understand culture of the UK.
So what is it?
No, when have I criticised...
What is it? Why can't you tell me what it is? You're criticising people who don't know what the culture of the UK is, so you must be able to tell me.
I can't be asked, buddy. Have a good day.
That went well, didn't it, buddy? I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Santa's stuck up the chimney. It must be him. He's scrambling around. He's making a din. There's soot on the carpet, stockings on the floor. But wait, a black smudge in the shape of a paw. Santa's not stuck. He doesn't meow. It must be your cat. And she's coming down now. Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
10:51 on LBC. Nikki says, pure delight. Two consecutive mornings with Ian Dale. Have a great show. It's worse than that, Nikki. It's 9 consecutive mornings, right up until next Friday. Richard says, Putin has people actively trying to assassinate Zelensky. Zelensky expressing a desire for... I've already done that one, haven't I? And Reese says, morning Ian, happy Boxing Day. I want to say thanks for having comrade Nick on and arguing back against his pro-Russian nonsense. Friends of mine who I've known for 30 plus years have also fallen for Russian propaganda, and the more scrutiny you can bring to these viewpoints, the better. Thanks for putting a spotlight on this nonsense. Ian says, The Guardian reported in 2023 that Putin told Naftali Bennett that he wouldn't kill Zelensky. However, Putin also said he wasn't going to invade Ukraine before he did. If Zelensky was killed, it will probably be an accident. Well, it usually is. I mean, when Putin assassinates people, they mysteriously fall out of windows. That's happened so often to Russian opposition leaders, or they sort of somehow take some poison which either incapacitates them or kills them. Suzanne in Croydon says, you were absolutely spot on with the way that you dealt with Nick and responded to his nonsense. Nick is obviously pro-Russia and thrives on propaganda. Loved listening to the verbal combat that you most definitely won. I don't do this to win. All I can hope to do is to expose the evil lies that some people put forward. Let's go to Matt in Worcester. Matt, hi.
Yeah, hello, good morning, Ian, and Merry Christmas to you. I think that, you know, Putin, I think he feels immortal. And the way he struts about on the world stage. He has that kind of air of immortality. And I think, you know, Zelensky, I think it's a message of hope for his people that Putin isn't immortal and that there will be an end to Putin. And the next person, I don't think they can be any worse.
Well, I don't agree with you there. I think it's entirely possible that whoever follows Putin could be worse than Putin. I mean, at the moment, you don't really... There was a time a couple of years ago when there was a lot of speculation about Putin's health and also that the fact that the war wasn't going well and maybe he might be deposed. And I remember at the time talking to various Russia experts who kept saying, well, be careful what you wish for because there's no guarantee that Putin's successor would be a democracy-loving Democrat.
Yeah, well, I do share your fears in that regard, that the next person could be, could fill his shoes to the way that Putin would want. But the truth will be that Putin will die, he's not immortal, and his death will be celebrated. You know, that needs to, maybe that an attack on Putin's conscience is all that Zelensky ultimately will be able to do if Russia keep sending men to their deaths and they keep...
But you see, Putin, I don't think, has a conscience because what I think a lot of European politicians fail to understand is that Putin has no regard for human life. And if you have a leader that has no regard for human life, there is no limit to what they might do.
Well, I don't disagree with that. But I think what's been proven so far is that Ukraine are capable of causing huge damage to Russia. They've already done so. Millions of lives have already been lost. And I think that Zelensky has, in addition, proven that any Russian encroachment to the point of... Well, any Russian encroachment at all will be met with a never-ending insurgency. So
yeah.
I think we really need to know what is Putin trying to achieve here because he's hated, people want him dead. There is a huge suffering on both sides. And why? There doesn't seem to me to be a credible answer to why is all this happening? I can't find an answer for that.
Well, there is an answer, and the answer is that Putin, and he said this publicly, it's not me sort of interpreting him, he said that he wants to recreate a Russia that had the similar borders to that of the Soviet Union. He wants to create a greater Russian empire and bring most of the states that were under Soviet control back within Russia. Now, that's... I mean, you can say that if you're the Russian leader, and you can negotiate it if you want, but the moment that you start invading sovereign states, that's when you create a problem for yourself. And I don't think Putin thought that 3 years on from February 2022 that he would still be in a position where he only controls 15 to 20% of Ukraine. He thought that he would control the whole country within days or weeks.
I think you're right. And he was pictured with various plans of potential Moldova encroachment and other countries beyond Ukraine in the early stages. But that's clearly failed. He's not going to form a new USSR. There's more NATO membership than ever. There's huge strength building up on his borders in regards to Finland and Poland. And so I think, you know, we need to hear from him that obviously he's failed. And what does he want next?
Okay, thank you very much, Matt. Scott's in West Hampstead. Hello, Scott.
Hi, happy Boxing Day, Ian.
Happy Boxing Day to you.
Your shows are always so well-balanced. I mean, you know, I've often thought there are quite a lot of, you know, Russian apologists on your show, but, you know, you give them a fair hearing, a good hearing, and even though at the end you often say goodbye, you know, I quite enjoy listening to the views. And President Zelensky is a very, very courageous leader, and you know, I'm hoping that Ukraine wins. You know, certainly I want a peace there, you know, and a ceasefire and peace. But I don't think Putin wants peace. And President Zelensky could have used the words instead of saying he wants Putin dead. He could have said he wants him deposed. But you know, but who will come after Putin if he dies? You know, is deposed. You know, it could, as you said, just you know, 5 or 10 minutes ago, it could be someone a lot worse.
Well, that is true, and that's the fear. I don't know how likely that is. I mean, there are plenty of people who can speculate on that better than I can.
I'm sure you're right. I mean, Nick and Milford, I mean, I enjoyed listening to him. I've heard him before, I think, on your show two or three times, and other what I call Russian apologists. But to me, he's a tin pot armchair general who knows a lot less about it than your first speaker, who wrote the book Killer in the Kremlin. And I must get hold of that book, because I think that's probably a lot more accurate than what Nick shared with you on your show this morning.
Well, I think you're probably right there, Scott, as you invariably are. Thank you very much indeed. T says, are you ever able to remain balanced and unbiased on any topic? Well, according to Scott, I am very balanced and unbiased. I am paid to have an opinion, and I'll express an opinion. I'll argue my opinion. Sometimes I won't have a convincing argument. I think with Nick, I did have a pretty convincing argument. But we are paid on LBC to have opinions, and we're free to express them. We're not working for the BBC. And there is a good reason for that, in that I like giving opinions. I don't want to keep saying, on the one hand this, on the other hand that. And I let callers do that. And that's a great joy of presenting on LBC, and that we have callers from all sorts of different opinions, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. Thank you for all your calls in that hour. Let's move on to talk about another international subject, because Donald Trump has announced strikes on Nigerian Islamic State terrorists in a post on his Truth Social platform. He has claimed that the strikes targeted terrorists in the country's northwest, accusing the group of attacking Christian communities. Well, this has been a story which I have to say I don't think we, or indeed the media in general, have given enough prominence to. The killings, the mass slaughterings of Christians in Nigeria, the Nigerian government seems incapable of doing anything about it for reasons maybe we'll discover in the next hour. But is it right for America to launch these strikes on ISIS in Nigeria?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. Police in Devon have warned against sea swimming after two people went missing on Christmas Day. A search for the pair was called off after emergency services were called to Budley Salterton yesterday morning. LBC's correspondent in the southwest, Andy Ballantyne, has more.
Despite extensive searches off the coast at Budley Salterton, nothing has been found. At darkness on Christmas Day, an aeroplane, helicopters and three lifeboats were stood down. Searches will not resume today. Two men in their 40s and 60s remain missing. A number of official and unofficial swims have been cancelled here in Devon. While there are no official weather warnings in place, Devon and Cornwall Police have asked anyone with plans to go swimming in the sea on Boxing Day not to. Andy Ballantyne, LBC, Devon.
The US Department of Defense has warned of more to come after airstrikes on the so-called Islamic State in northwest Nigeria. President Trump says the US carried out a powerful and deadly strike after claims they've been targeting Christians. Nigeria's foreign minister called it a joint operation targeting terrorists. Reports in the US suggest Donald Trump will hold talks with Ukraine's president over the weekend. Volodymyr Zelensky said a lot can be decided before the new year after having an hour-long conversation with US officials yesterday. The Kremlin are looking into the latest proposals in the US-backed peace plan. The Prime Minister has been warned he's alienating rural communities with plans to reform animal welfare laws. The government's consulting on banning trail hunting in England and Wales over concerns it's covering up traditional fox hunting. Simon Russell is chair of the Hunt Saboteurs Association and has told LBC a ban is widely supported.
85% of the population wants to see our wildlife protected. We've lost 40% of our foxes since the early 2000s. It's something people compare are passionate about, and leaving our wildlife alone to live out their natural lives.
And 20 wickets have fallen on the opening day of the fourth Ashes test in Melbourne. After bowling out Australia for 152 runs, England could only manage 110 in reply. The hosts are four without loss at close with a lead of 46 and have already won the series. LBC weather, a mostly dry Boxing Day with sunny spells, cloudier in central and southwestern areas, another chilly day with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning, very good Boxing Day morning. It's 3 minutes past 11 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until one. Delighted to say I'm going to be here in this slot right up until the 2nd of January, so hope you'll keep me company over the next 8 days. Is it eight? One, two, five, no, 7 days. James will be back on the 5th of January. Have no fear, because I know he has a legion of fans who'll be eagerly anticipating his return. Now, the first 2 hours of this show, I get, are made possibly a little bit heavy for a Boxing Day programme, but I think they are so important, particularly what we're going to be talking about in the next hour. But fear not, we're going to lighten things up in the final hour, talking about phobias. So I want to hear about your phobias and how you overcome them, if you do, in the 12 o'clock hour. But I want to talk about Nigeria, and I'm going to treat this as a bit of a teach-in, because I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on what's going on in Nigeria. There have been some terrible, terrible outrages over the last few years where Christian communities have been decimated, where a lot of Christians have been slaughtered by ISIS terrorists. I'm not going to call them militants. Let's call them what they are. They are terrorists. I'm fed up. I mean, I've got a Guardian newspaper report here, and they just talk about militants. Well, that to me minimises what these people are doing. And they are going into townships and communities and just slaughtering indiscriminately people who are Christians. And if this was being done to other communities, it would be leading the world news headlines. And it hasn't done. And I think that a lot of media organisations, maybe including us, we need to look ourselves in the mirror and think, well, why have we not covered this in the past? And frankly, the reason we're covering it today is because of Donald Trump. Because anything that he does or says is newsworthy. And he has said on his Truth Social platform that the US has carried out airstrikes against ISIS terrorists in northwestern Nigeria yesterday, Christmas Day. And to be fair to him, he has been criticising these people. Do we even call them people? These terrorists for targeting Christians for many, many weeks. This is what he said on Truth Social. He said, "Tonight, at my direction as Commander-in-Chief, the United States launched a powerful and deadly strike against ISIS terrorist scum in the northwest of Nigeria, who've been targeting and viciously killing primarily innocent Christians at levels not seen for many years and even centuries. I've previously warned these terrorists that if they did not stop the slaughtering of Christians, there would be hell to pay. And tonight there was. The Department of War executed numerous perfect strikes, as only the United States is capable of doing." Well, I mean, let's ignore the hyperbole there. It's a very simple question. And I doubt whether many of you listening will know much more about this than I do, but is your gut telling you that this was the right thing to do, or does your antipathy towards Donald Trump mean that you will automatically say, no, it's not the right thing to do? Now, this is not an act of war by the United States against Nigeria. It's been done with the full cooperation, as I understand it, of the Nigerian government, which is a democratically elected government, but has had all sorts of problems, and there have been various governments over the past 20 years. So I really want to hear from you to try and sort of educate us on what's going on in Nigeria with regard to ISIS and with regard to the killing of Christians. What's going on? Do you welcome the fact that Donald Trump has intervened and launched these strikes? 0345 6060 973. And I'd love it if, look, there's obviously a large Nigerian community in this country. You probably know far more about this than I do, so we'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, let's get a bit of background on this from Helen Hoddinott, LBC's news reporter, who's been following this. Helen, very good good morning to you. Tell us what's caused the United States to act in this way.
So, Ian, just looking at what's come out over the last few hours, footage on social media posted by the US Defense Department yesterday appeared to show this missile being launched from a military vessel, while video from Sokoto State, which is the targeted area in Nigeria, appeared to show locals holding metal debris, which looks like it was part of a projectile, while a fire burns in the background of the clip. US officials said the strikes were conducted in coordination with Nigerian authorities and claimed that camps being run by militants linked to the Islamic State there were hit, adding that an initial assessment suggested multiple fatalities. As you say, Trump described the targets as terrorist scum who were targeting, in his words, targeting and viciously killing primarily innocent Christians. And those claims of Christians being targeted have been circulating in some right-wing US circles for months. Republican Senator Ted Cruz referred to it as a genocide. But those claims about it being a religiously targeted, one-sided attack are strongly contested. Analysts say armed groups have waged campaigns of violence in Nigeria, but that they affect all communities, regardless of background or belief. Nigeria's Minister of Information, Mohammed Idris, last month said the armed groups aren't carrying out the attacks for religious reasons specifically.
So what we are saying is that we do recognize that Nigeria has security challenges all around, especially in the northern part of the country. But what we want the world to know is that the drivers of this conflict are diverse, as they are very complex, because we have economic issues, we have issues of land, we also have religious issues there. I mean, very recently, even the Vatican Secretary of State also affirmed that, yes, indeed, there are conflicts, there are, you know, killings going on in Nigeria in many parts, but they are largely social issues,
And Ian, we have seen these horrific examples over the last couple of months. Last month, two people were killed in one attack on a church, while a group of 25 girls who are reportedly Muslim were abducted from a school. Another huge group were abducted from a Catholic school last month. They were all released just before Christmas. And President Trump is citing this idea of Christians being targeted as his reason for launching these strikes. He's backed by right-wing US politicians and campaigner, including last month rapper Nicki Minaj, who's been making increasingly high-profile political interventions. She's previously spoken about her Christian faith and gave a speech last month at a UN event organized by the US, praising the president for these moves.
I would like to thank President Trump for prioritizing this issue and for his leadership on the global stage in calling for urgent action to defend Christians in Nigeria, to combat extremism, and to bring a stop to violence against those who simply want to exercise their natural right to freedom of religion or belief.
Now, following yesterday's strikes, Nigeria's foreign minister has said the strikes have been planned for quite some time and had used further intelligence provided by Nigeria. He also did not rule out further strikes, but this could be taken as part of a wider flurry of activity by the US. These strikes in Nigeria were carried out less than a week after a US attack in Syria, which was described by US officials as a large-scale attack that hit 70 targets with a similar stated aim to eliminate ISIS fighters' infrastructure and weapons sites.
Alan, I might be testing your knowledge about the Nigerian armed forces a little here, but do we have any indication as to why the Nigerian government isn't doing this? Because as I understand it, they have pretty well developed armed forces, and yet they don't seem to have been deployed. They're relying on America.
From what I gather, the country's military is already stretched in its battle against these multiple armed groups that are operating across the country. If you look at a map of where these terrorist attacks are being carried out, it's kind of across the entire country. So from what I gather, they are already stretched dealing with that. And it was a warning last month that Donald Trump gave for the Nigerian government to act in a way that he felt was appropriate against these terrorist groups, but he clearly feels that not enough has been done, and now he's launched the attack, and he and the Nigerian government haven't ruled out more.
Helen, thank you very much indeed. That's Helen Hodina, LBC's news reporter. Well, she's given some interesting background to that. Lots of text coming in. Phone calls too, 0345 6060973. Do you welcome these strikes by America in coordination with the Nigerian government on the ISIS terrorists in Nigeria? Donald Trump will defend this, saying, well, he's trying to end another armed conflict. And I think there is some substance to that argument here. But of course, if you are an anti-Trumper, if you're a bit anti-American, you're going to see this as another example of America interfering in another country, even though that government has asked them to do it. And if you are originally from Nigeria and you can shed some light on what's going on there, we would love to hear from you as well. Maybe you're listening in Nigeria. I know we have lots of listeners in Nigeria. In fact, I had one call in the other day from Lagos. 0345 6060 973. Michael says, thank you for focusing on this topic. Having grown up in Delta State in Nigeria in the expat community, I'm very glad that Trump has stood up for Christians in northern Nigeria who've been under threat for many years. The situation has been made worse by ISIS activity in Mali this year. I wish Starmer would show some leadership on this issue too. That's Michael in Raines Park. And Ross says, has Trump just launched these Nigerian strikes and the Venezuelan incidents to distract from the latest document drop and 1 million more on Epstein? Well, look, I suppose there will always be that suspicion that it's used as a sort of so-called dead cat tactic to distract from domestic woes. It wouldn't be the first time a leader has done that. But on this, I genuinely don't think it is. I think there is a genuine crisis situation going on in Nigeria. The Nigerian government certainly thinks so. They've proved unable to defeat the likes of Boko Haram and other groups that are launching these terror attacks. So they've asked America for help. Well, what would you have done if you were the American president? 0345 6060 973. It's 11:15.
This is LBC. Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes. Or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa. Or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Bank.
Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Ian Dale on LBC.
17 minutes past 11 on LBC. Addy says, Ian knows nothing about Nigeria or America's claimed genociding of Christians in some parts of northern Nigeria. He should please move on. I'm not going to move on at all. We're not until 12 anyway. Look, I've set out my stall at the beginning of the hour. I've admitted I'm not an expert on this subject. I can't be an expert on every single subject that I talk about. But I know that there are plenty of people listening who will know a lot about it. And so I've asked them to call in and inform us. We'll also have another guest at the bottom of the hour on the subject. If you don't think that the terror attacks on all of these people... A lot of them are Christians, not all, but a lot of them are. If you don't think that is a subject worthy of discussion on a station that is called Leading Britain's Conversation, then I think you need to give your head a wobble, Addy, if I may say so. And if you know so much about it, feel free to call in and inform us. Another text here says, we Nigerians are in support of the bombing of these Islamic State militants and terrorists. That's from Okemi. And Alex says, this shouldn't even be a debate. Of course it's the right thing to do. How embarrassing that it's taken Trump to do the right thing. Though, where are our weak European leaders? That's Alex in Surrey. I don't know whether this is the same Addy or not. Trump has put in a distraction to the Epstein story, and the Western media, including LBC, are lapping it up numpties. No, Addy, if you don't think that these terrorists deserve to be eliminated, it's not me that's the numpty, mate, is it? Maxine says, please report the truth as to what's going on in Nigeria. Both Muslims and Christians have been killed. There are jihadists and bandits who are lawless, operating in northern Nigeria. Trump, a racist, does not care about Christians in the US. So why would he care about Christians in Nigeria who are black? He wants to destabilize West Africa. The attack apparently took place close to the border with the Sahel. He has been targeting Nigeria for months. The US has lost influence in Africa. This will not end well. Well, a more delusional text I could not have read out, I suspect, because the fact is the Nigerian government, according to all the reports I've read, actually asked Donald Trump to do this. And to say that, I mean, Trump, I think he's self-declared not particularly religious, but a lot of his supporters are in America. So to say that he doesn't care about Christians in America is just fatuous. Steve says, even a stop clock is right twice a day. I think everything about Trump is despicable, but if the intel behind these stories is correct, then he is right on this. Mike's in Finchley. Hello, Mike.
Hi, and Merry Christmas, and best Thank wishes you. For 26. Thank you. Yeah, I think what struck me is that this has been going on, the murder of Christians and Muslims by extremist jihadists going on in Africa. And it's been going on, from what I've read up, for over a decade.
Yeah.
So maybe 100,000 has been reported by certain organizations. And if that is true, my question is this. Two questions or two points. One is, was Donald Trump right to do this? Well, what he's done has actually brought it onto the news and reminded everyone his reason for doing it because of the murders going on. So that's one point, which otherwise would have remained very quiet in the news. You'd have, I think over time, we've had a very tiny bit of news about it. And yet, every day, big news about the war in Israel and Gaza. But very, very quiet about the many, many more tens of thousands being murdered by Islamic jihadists in Africa. So it's the hypocrisy here. If it wasn't for Trump, I don't like the guy. I'm not a fan of Trump. But if it wasn't for what he did, this wouldn't have been highlighted. So it's the hypocrisy. Those people who go out the streets, disturbing our way of life in central London and other cities around the world, why don't they ever, ever go out there and complain about the jihadist murdering innocent people, Christians as well as Muslims? That's the question I
have in my mind.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right to have that in your mind. And it's not just in Nigeria that we could ask that question about. The war in Sudan as well, and the war in the Congo, which has killed many more people that have been, and I'm not diminishing the number of people that have been killed in Palestine at all, but it's a fraction of the number of people that have been killed in Sudan and Congo. And there are other conflicts all around the world which don't get the attention they deserve. Now, that is partly because, for whatever reason, protesters seem to want to protest about Israel, and also a media that is just not interested in African stories for whatever reason.
Well, this is what the point is I'm making. I'm highlighting this because this really winds me up, and I'm sure many others like me who feel the hypocrisy of Christians going out supporting these pro-Palestinian marches. They're supporting them, and they're Christians themselves, but they keep quiet about the murders in Africa. And I say Africa, including, obviously, as you mentioned, Sudan, Congo, Nigeria, and other parts. So, and they talk about human rights. Oh, my God, the human rights in other Muslim countries. Don't get me wrong, there's some really, really good Muslim people around the world. And I have many friends who are with work as well. And I'm just saying there are extremists who are spoiling it for all Muslims, as well as others of other faiths. And that needs to be stamped down on by looking at the crowds that turn up in these pro-Pali demos, spoiling our way of life in cities around the world because of these demos and these flares and these graffiti and these banners of hate. This is not what we want. Listen to the King's speech yesterday. It's all about peace, you know, respecting life. That's what it should be about. But unfortunately, there are too many extremist jihadists who are happily going around murdering in people in Africa, people in also within their own region of Gaza. There are people, extremists, killing other Gazans. So, you know, where are the demonstrations? Why does it take something like what Donald Trump has done to bring it out in the open again? Why isn't the BBC and Sky and so on, why isn't that being mentioned more often?
Okay.
Because it's been going on for over a decade, two decades.
Well, it is. I mean, I think it was first brought to our attention when Boko Haram kidnapped, 120 schoolgirls. I can't remember now what religion they were, but in a sense, the religion doesn't matter. They are killing people, whether they're Muslim or Christian. I mean, we can get sidetracked by that. The fact is, they are killing innocent people, they're kidnapping them, and they shouldn't be allowed to. Now, several people on text, and I'll read one or two of these out in a moment, are saying, oh, well, it's all about oil, isn't it, Ian, that Nigeria is the biggest oil producer in Africa. Well, it's easy to make that comment, I suppose, and draw two and two and make five, or is it four? Des Moines says, those two first people have told you a lot of lies. The president is a Muslim and doesn't care about the killing of Christians by Muslims. Better ask other Nigerian Christians here and in Nigeria. The Nigerian government also collaborates with the terrorists. Christians are being killed in all kinds of ways, including children, by guns and beheadings and burnings to death. Try Googling and checking the social media. There is a lot of lies from the Muslims in Nigeria, he says, etc., etc., etc. Well, whenever there's any sort of conflict, you do have to try and sort of wade through the reeds and work out who's telling the truth and who isn't. And just on those schoolgirls that were kidnapped, 276 of them, mostly Christian girls, were kidnapped by Boko Haram in 2014. So that's 11 years ago. And this sort of thing, I read a few months ago about other kidnappings in schools. So these things are still happening. The Nigerian government doesn't seem to be able to control it. According to Des Moines there in that last text, they have no interest in doing so because they're in league with the terrorists. Well, that's quite an accusation to make, isn't it? But as I say, this is not a subject I can give you any lectures on, so I'm rather hoping that people will ring in and give me some first-hand knowledge. Charles is in Southport. Hello, Charles.
Hi, this is Charles. I heard what everyone is saying, but I'll give you first-hand information. Growing up in Nigeria, I grew up in Nigeria before I moved to the UK, and this is a very deep-rooted problem in Nigeria. You did mention bring back our girls, because I'll give kudos to Trump for this bombing, because during Obama's administration, Obama refused to supply ammunition to the Nigerian government to fight Boko Haram for some reasons I don't know. And the eve of the election, the previous Jonathan Goodluck administration, John Kerry was in Nigeria, and he broke all the diplomatic protocols. He didn't see the president as a Secretary of State. He came into Nigeria on the eve of the election, and you did not see the president. And this going on, and then getting to 2023, we have Muslim ticket in Nigeria. Nigeria is 50% Christian and 50% Muslims, but for so long, Nigeria has never had a Muslim ticket. That's the president being a Muslim and the vice president being a Muslim. It's always Christian and Muslim. But for some reason, we don't understand how this stuff is going on. And people are being killed daily. The president has refused to address the nation. He doesn't say anything about it. And mainly, historically, when you look at, I wouldn't just say Muslims, but when you look at the people that are doing this are the Fulanis. When you look at how they've dominated the West Africa and the Sahel, they dominate by, you know, violence and, you know, to, you know, land grabbing and all that stuff. And they keep pushing down towards the south because southern Nigeria is more of Christian and northern Nigeria is more of Muslims. And people saying that Trump is a racist and all that, I don't see him as a racist. I just see him as a human who is looking after other Christians by people trying to live and others should live as well. So it doesn't have anything to do with racism, or it doesn't have anything to do with minerals. Because checking, America has about 135 refineries, and they produce way more than Nigeria in terms of oil. So I don't see that happening. And meanwhile, having said that, Nigeria does not even have control of their own oil, because all the companies mining oil in Nigeria, they are all foreign companies. So whatever they give to Nigeria, whatever figure they give to Nigeria is what Nigeria. We don't have the engineering firm to do all those things. We don't have the high tech to do that by ourselves. So I think we should give kudos to Trump. We should put politics aside and then, you know, be humans for once, instead of, you know, playing racism and politics with people's lives. I think he did the right thing.
How much impact do these attacks have on just ordinary Nigerian lives? I mean, are people leaving the country because of them?
Yes. People are leaving the country. There's this slogan in Nigeria that is called Jakba syndrome. It means just leave. So it means like when you leave, your life is better. It's more important than any other thing, because the government don't seem to care. Currently, in that region, in the northern part of Nigeria, we have about 23 million out of school children. We have 23 million out of school children in Nigeria, and the northern part of Nigeria has about 80% of that. That's more than the population of the whole Baltic states. So you can imagine, out of two children, which is about between the age of 8 to 16, imagine what Nigeria is going to be in the next 10 years if these people are not looked after.
Mm.
The government is not putting, and these are the people that are being, you know, that go into this banditry, terrorism and all that, because they lack basic education, they lack that consciousness, and the government is not doing enough. Because I believe fighting terrorism, you fight it conventionally and unconventionally, because, you know, you need to educate these people to be, you know, quite conscious of their self, conscious of their environment and what they can do to add, you know, to make the country grow. But people are not looking at that aspect. So I think what Trump has done, he's done a great job, to be honest with you. I'll give it to him. I'm not a big fan of Trump, but this, I will give it to him.
Well, Charles, you're exactly the kind of person I wanted to call in, because I think you've informed our conversation, and one can ask for no more than that. Thank you very much indeed for that. We'll take more of your calls in a moment on this situation in Nigeria, where Donald Trump has launched missile strikes against ISIS terrorists. It's 11:31 on LBC. Let's get the latest news headlines with David Dom.
The US has warned of further strikes after a powerful and deadly attack against the so-called Islamic State in Nigeria. Donald Trump said the group had been targeting innocent Christians. It's reported Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky will meet on Sunday for another round of talks to end the war between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine's president says a lot can happen between now and the new year after discussions with officials yesterday. And police in Devon are asking people not to go in the sea after two people went missing on Christmas Day. Emergency services have called off their search after reports of a number of people getting into difficulty. LBC weather. Staying dry for many of us this Boxing Day afternoon with sunny spells, cloudier in the far northeast, central and southwest of England with a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
In a world where innovation meets style, there's a new name on the road. And right now, families like yours are discovering a car brand that values you. Feel the future in motion as the Emotify petrol and E5 electric blend next level technology with real family life. With state-of-the-art features and advanced safety systems as standard, say hello to a car that fits your lifestyle and your future. Starting from £23,990. Book your test drive online now. Search Emota to find your nearest dealer. Emota. Value everything.
At Nuffield Health, we're more than just a gym. We're a place to swim and a place to join in. We're a place to work out and a place to spin. We're a place to relax and take it all in. There are so many ways to enjoy being a member of Nuffield Health. With saunas, steam rooms, pools and hundreds of classes, we're more than just a gym. Get more from your membership. Join today at nuffieldhealth.com. Facilities vary. Check locally for details.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
Same.
Ho, ho, ho!
Same.
3, 2, 1, hey!
Same.
Whoa, thanks.
Same.
What does Santa call his dog?
Same. Same.
One word. 3 syllables.
Same. Same.
Sorry, it's a bit dry.
New plates.
Ooh.
Treat your table to something different this Christmas. Visit your local IKEA now. IKEA, the wonderful every day.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
1134. John says, Trump has almost certainly provided support in Nigeria to protect the Christians in order to consolidate the Christian vote in America. Opportunist as always, and that's all there is to it. I'm always suspicious when someone says that's all there is to it, because I think things are a lot more complicated than that. Generally, you would not think that someone would launch a military attack just to consolidate a bit of a vote in America. I'm not sure I really buy that. Brian says, who knew that the British government is complicit in genocide in Sudan, Nigeria and other countries? Those conflicts are exactly the same as the genocide in Gaza, aren't they, Ian? Well, another person who wishes to do down their own country for no good reason at all. No, all conflicts are different. They're not all similar. Brian continues, the idea that those who are pro-Palestinian are deaf to genocide in other parts of the world is just apologist garbage. Well, why aren't there marches going on about the genocide in Sudan or Congo? I mean, you have to answer that question, Brian, before I can take you seriously, I'm afraid. We'll come to more of your calls in just a second, but first let's talk to Robert Fox, war expert and defence editor of the Evening Standard. Good to talk to you on Boxing Day. Robert, thank you for coming on. Now, these terrorists have been operating in Nigeria for many, many, many years. What do you think lies behind the timing of this attack by the United States?
I think they've got very, very worried about the resurgence globally of IS, ISL, you name it. And the problem with Africa, and really Trump didn't want to focus on Africa, you can see that from his national security strategy, but is forced to because there is so much awful phrase, you know, buzzword, and pick me up for using it, I'm trying to think of a better expression, it's ungoverned space. And what you are rightly alluding to, Ian, is what's going on in Sudan. Go move west, move through the sub-Saharan belt, and rightly you focused on the war between Rwanda, on the borders of Rwanda and Congo. And this is getting really serious in that it allows a free play area for these groups. it's interesting that Trump has operated in using Central Command to do this, because it's one of the smallest of the US commands, and it's not a main focus. But I think it points to the next quarter century to come. And the next quarter century to come is going to be much more focused on Africa, and for very obvious reasons.
Now, Nigeria is a very powerful country in Africa. I think the population is about 250 million, something like that. It's a very populous country. But it's always had maybe a pretty unstable government. Why has the Nigerian government failed to be able to control ISIS within its borders?
I think we may be going back to even the previous era, when it was a British colony, which handed over certain institutions which the Nigerian constitution and Nigerian governments adhere to. But it is vast, it is very divided ethnically, had a terrible civil war after independence, and it is divided on confessional lines too. It's very interesting that it has focused on the Christians in the northeast, largely a rural pastoral community, very strong element in Nigerian culture, but they're on the bottom end at the moment. One of the things that we're looking at here as to why Trump has intervened, which brings us to Europe and to Britain, is the way that the French, after all, have abandoned their interests in so many of the sub-Saharan countries and have left a vacuum. And all kinds of things have been going on with resurgence of these groups. It's not that they've just been there all the time. They're getting stronger. And I think this is the thing that has worried. I think I'd love to know what the back corridor conversations are in Washington, in London, and in France, because this relates to the shock of the Bondi Beach shootings. Suddenly we have IS back as a global terrorist phenomenon. It's interesting, if you hear the end of year speech by the new head of MI6, what is she doing? She's focusing on subversion from Eastern Europe, the European context, and the kind of thing you and I are talking about now, and rightly I hope our listeners are really engaged with, hardly figures at all. Yes, eyes have been taken over a lot of balls here.
Well, the fact that we have a full switchboard of calls indicates that there is a lot of interest in this subject, which I wish that was reflected in other parts of the British media, I have to say. But Robert, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Robert Fox, Defence Editor of the Evening Standard. Right, let's rattle through some of your calls, because I want to get through all of them by 12 o'clock. Tony is a first-time caller in Nantwich. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Nice to speak to you.
What would you like to say?
Right. I just want to chip in because I feel like a lot of your callers are lacking important context about what is going on in Nigeria. So, as you already know, Nigeria is divided along religious lines. The northern part of the country is mostly Muslim. There are three names I'm going to mention, and I'll tell you why I'm mentioning these names. In 2018, about 150 schoolgirls were kidnapped in Yobe State in northern Nigeria. Every single one of them has been released apart from one, a young girl called Leah. And she was kept in captivity up till today because she refused to convert to Islam. Second name is Sunday Jackson, 2021. This Christian farmer was attacked on his farm by Islamic militants. He managed to overpower and kill one of them in self-defense. Despite that, he was convicted for murder, and he was only pardoned 3 days ago. In 2022, Atiku Abubakar, who was the presidential candidate of one of the leading parties in Nigeria, he posted a tweet where he condemned the killing of a young lady in northern Nigeria who was killed because of blasphemous allegations. He received so much blowback from his supporters that he ended up deleting that tweet. So when people say that these attacks are not related to religion, it's absolutely not true. Yes, Islamic militants target both Muslims and Christians because, of course, they think that many of the mainstream Muslims are not Muslim enough. But it is disproportionately targeted towards Christians. I'm from Nigeria. And I lived in northern Nigeria up until 2018 before I left the country. And I've seen these things firsthand. Currently, the Nigerian government lack the political will to do something about it because they don't want to alienate their political base. You cannot become president in Nigeria without the Northern Bloc voting for you because they are in the majority. As for the question of why Trump is getting involved now, you have to go back to Sunday Jackson, who was convicted of murder. A lot of the activism to get him released came to the attention of prominent right-wing politicians in the U.S. who took up this mandate and started to amplify it. This led to it getting to the attention of Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump, and of course, because of the Christian conservative influence that is becoming larger and larger in the American government, they felt the need to intervene. Now, Sunday Jackson was released 3 days ago, and the American government has now decided to take a keen interest in what is going on in northern Nigeria. It doesn't mean that Trump particularly cares about Christians in northern Nigeria, but if this forces the hand of the Nigerian government to do something about the insecurity and the killings that have been going on for more than 10 years.
Why do you think Trump has intervened then?
Trump has intervened because this has been portrayed to Trump as a genocide against Christians. And Trump has a Christian base that he needs to satisfy.
Do you think he would really launch military attacks just for that reason? I find that difficult to believe.
Of course, it's not. You have to look at it in two ways. One, there's an ongoing insurgency that is taking a lot of lives. But there are insurgencies going on all across the world, taking a lot of lives. Trump is not getting involved in every single one of them. He's getting involved in this one particularly because there's something to be gained, either, you know, in form of the narrative that the government is pushing, okay, or in form of whatever political gain he can get.
All right, Tony, thank you very much indeed. Now, Nigeria's government has confirmed the attacks, but they've dismissed Trump's assertions, saying that armed groups target both Muslim and Christian communities in the country, and US claims that Christians face persecution do not represent a complex security situation and ignore efforts by Nigerian authorities to safeguard religious freedom. Now, we should point out that, as one of our callers pointed out earlier, both the president and vice president of Nigeria are indeed Muslims themselves. Harry is in Derby. Hello, Harry.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Hi.
Yeah, I myself just recently moved to the UK in 2022, and I am from the Christian minority in Nigeria, from the northern part. And I have experienced firsthand what this genocide looks like. And I would say it is a genocide of Christians, especially because they are in the minority in the northern part of the country. So before moving here, I had a big farmland and I was growing crops, and it was attacked and nothing happened. And most of my workers were killed in the attack, and it was never reported in the news. We went to security operatives to complain and nothing was done about it. And I had to practically pick up my family and run for my life. So this has been going on for years and years, and the government seems to do nothing about it.
Why?
And, well, this... it's a big unanswered question, to be fair. It could be for political reasons, for political gains. Some people might argue that your opponents, politicians, are the ones who are sabotaging the nuts just to make sure that the government looks incompetent. But at the same time, it's been happening in the previous government before. And do you remember that the previous government gave amnesty to most Boko Haram members who were then put into the security armed forces? And I am led to believe that due to that act, the security armed forces have been infiltrated. So they know beforehand, before attacks are happening, they know ahead of hand, they know where to go. And somehow, most of the Christian communities who have been massacred do believe that the security operatives are involved in it, because despite their cries, despite their warnings beforehand, before being attacked, or intelligence being served to security operatives, nothing has been done about it.
I mean, that would indicate a huge degree of corruption within the Nigerian government, wouldn't it?
Yep, it's not a far cry to say that the political environment within the system, it is heavily corrupt. But then again, it goes to say that there is actually a bigger cause for an Islamic genocide. And I must say that there are good Muslims. There are Muslims who have fought casualty to this because they've risen to speak up against it. But again, at the same time, there are people who have extremist values, who are uneducated, who all they believe in is a jihad war against non-Muslims. It's a way of showing their power. And that has been the major problem, I'd say.
Harry, pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. We'll take more of your calls coming up to 12. And then we're going to talk about phobias. So I'm really interested to know, what's the weirdest phobia that we can discover between 12 and 1? A friend of mine has just texted me saying, I have a phobia of fingernails. I have to say, I have a dislike of fingernails. I mean, I'm assuming he means like ones that have been cut. I can't see how anyone would particularly like fingernails. I'm sure there's somebody with a fetish out there somewhere that say they do. But if you've got a weirder phobia than that, give me a call after 12. It's 11:47.
I'm Andrew Marr. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
You could say to the British people on Budget Day, look, things are really bad, therefore I have to raise income tax. So tomorrow I'm going to resign as Chancellor of the Exchequer, having done the right thing.
And what do you think would happen in financial markets if I did that?
It depends who took over.
President Trump seems to be waking up every morning with a new idea, and be it tariffs or something else. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's thought it through.
What's your verdict so far on how it's going?
Do you despair of the risk-free, be all things to all men approach of Keir Starmer, which I think is a fool's errand.
I'll be back in the new year leading Britain's conversation.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico, or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives, or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 12. James is in Manchester. Hi, James.
Hello. I'm calling from Manchester. First time caller here.
Welcome.
So, thank you. I've lived in the UK since 2001. And I'm half Nigerian, half Ghanaian. In about 2019, I went to northern parts of Nigeria with an organization called Open Doors. They do an incredible work with the persecuted church. And firsthand, I got to speak with people who had experienced the brutality and just the horrible things that these terrorists are doing. And they're in different factions. You have Boko Haram, you have the Fulani herdsmen, you have other factions. And I want to make this clear. They are targeting Christians. Okay. Now, Muslims do get killed, but there is a clear Christian genocide going on. The Muslims that get killed are the Muslims that do not agree with their ideology, refuse to join them. Now, just listen to this. According to the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, over 125,000 Christians have been killed since 2009. If you put that in perspective, that means the number of Christians being killed in Nigeria alone is more than the whole world, every part of the world where Christians have been killed, is more than all those places combined. So Nigeria is technically the most dangerous place to be as a Christian right now. So I'm kind of surprised that the Western media at large is not picking up on this. Just about a few weeks ago, I got to interview a guy who was an ex-terrorist. So basically, in late 70s and 80s, in the northern part of Nigeria, he basically laid the foundation for what later became Boko Haram. And he was explaining to me the ideology behind this movement. It is to eliminate, to kill the Christians, to take over the territory, take over the land. And in the middle parts of Nigeria, referred to as the Middle Belt, that's exactly what they're doing. They seize the land, okay? They get rid of the Christians, they kill them if they try to fight, and they rename the villages and they take over. This has been going on for years. So we're so thankful that this has got to the international media and President Trump has done what he has done. Many people in Nigeria right now are thankful for these actions. And I think a previous caller made this point, that the government in many ways is complicit. There's all kinds of corruption going on, and it's really bad. And I find it really strange that even the Western media many times are taking the talking points of the government, which oftentimes has complicity to it. So they would obviously try to deny the fact that there's no genocide going on. But if you... Hang on a second.
I only read that statement out from the Nigerian government to provide, to give them a right of reply to the criticism that they've had. I think that's only the right thing to do. That doesn't mean to say I'm taking their side.
Oh, I'm not saying that about you necessarily. In fact, when I say that, I'm actually referring to what I've read on Sky News and BBC especially. They have taken those... Let me give you an example. Sky News quoted a guy called Gumi, who many Nigerians listening to me will know sympathizes for the terrorists. They quoted him as a way of defending their idea that there's no genocide going on. That is ridiculous. So my point is, journalism is not really being done, real journalism, to see what's going on ground and report accurately what's actually going on. There are many states right now that are facing a lot of Christians in those states facing a lot of violence, being killed, masses. I mean, I spoke to a lady whose husband was beheaded, and the people whose families have been killed. And it's, I find it's really sad that when I listen to Western press, the outrage is not there. There's no sense of, it doesn't seem like there's bothered about this. And in my view, this actually, the number of people being killed is even more than what's going on in Gaza. As in, this is really important. If we don't act and talk about this now, sad to say, it is also coming here to the West. It's coming to, I mean, it's already here in many ways. It's an ideology we're trying to deal with.
Well, I think it's seeking to take over. I totally agree with you on virtually everything that you've said there. And, I mean, that's part of the reason why I wanted to talk about it today, which, I mean, in a sense, it's not the kind of subject that you would automatically think, oh, yes, let's talk about this on Boxing Day. But I think it is a really important subject for all the reasons you've just articulated.
Thank you. And I want to say this is something that's so important for the British public to be aware of. There's an Islamic ideology. It's a jihadist in nature. It's not just religious. It's political. It's here to take over. And they start gradually. And when they gain dominance, anyone that doesn't agree with them is killed.
Yeah.
And we in Nigeria have seen this over and over again. So the British public, in fact, just many well-meaning people should be aware of this right now, especially if we're concerned about democracy and having our freedoms to serve, to worship the God we choose to worship.
James, you are the caller of the hour so far. Thank you very much indeed. Joyce is in Crawley. Hello, Joyce.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for this discussion. It's so heartwarming to know that you thought of highlighting this issue. Nigeria is in a state of emergency. That's what I think the government should acknowledge. Because it's gone beyond the government controlling it. You see what is happening. I'm a Christian from the South, and I'm a clergy. I'm in mission. And so what I see in Nigeria is very troubling. You know, in those days, they denied every bit of it. But thank God for social media now. So it's not a thing that you can deny. But because our government is corrupt in and out, it's so corrupt that it's involved, his hands are not clean. So he's not in a situation to ameliorate the suffering of the Christians in the north. It's not just in the north. In the south, what they do now is to infiltrate. They come in lorry loads and they will come with ammunition. How can you be fighting farmers, fighting local community with guns? We don't have the guns. Where did they get it? And these guys are openly saying we cannot go. We were brought in to help Islamize this nation, and you can't take us away now. And you know, a government that is so lacks shame openly said terrorists have been forgiven and put in the army.
Yeah.
Have you?
Well, I mean, that is an appalling thing. I think it's very interesting that you and other callers have talked about the corruption of the Nigerian government. I remember when Kemi Badenoch talked about that, and bear in mind that she's Nigerian herself originally. She got roundly criticised for saying that the Nigerian government was corrupt, but interesting to hear from our callers. Adebayo is in Reading. Adebayo, I'm afraid we haven't got a lot of time. What would you like to say?
Thank you for picking my call, Ian. I totally disagree with all people who have been commenting on this thing since you brought this issue of Nigeria in. If you listen to all of them, they are all Christian, and that is a fabricated history. There's no doubt that terrorism is global. There's no doubt that ISIS, World Com, they are global. Yes, the element of it in Nigeria, but we all know the origin of ISIS. I'm not going to that one now. I will give you two examples. The problem we are having with this security has to do with the government because of the corruption. During the time of the Khan president, Khan is a Christian Association of Nigeria, their president in the former regime of one time head of state. The state allocated money to buy equipment from America, from the West, to combat the terrorists. The money was taken to South Africa that was impounded on the plane in South Africa. It is because of the political gain they were unable to address the security issue. Nigeria, the statistics people are giving you are wrong statistics. In the sense, Nigeria is Muslim are more suffering under this ICS stuff than the Christian in the north. That is number one. Number two, it is not 50-50. The Christian in Nigeria is 35%. Muslim are 55%, and non-Christian, non-Muslims, they are the rest. So to say that is absolutely wrong. In the south I come from, we are experiencing the insecurity as well. But to say that it is this Christian genocide, it is with ulterior motive. People who are championing that cause in America, they are the Easterners who want to separate from Nigeria. And the bulk of the Easterners are Christians.
Okay, I'm going to have to finish because we've gone over our time. I apologise for cutting you off like that, but we do have to finish. I will be returning to this subject on my evening show in the new year, I promise. Gordon says, fascinating hour of radio. I have learned so much. Thank you. Well, I can't ask more than that, Gordon. Thank you very much. Now, in the next hour, we're going to lighten things up a bit, or are we? Because we're going to be talking about phobias. And I think virtually everyone listening to this programme has some sort of phobia, whether you like to admit it to yourself or not. Spiders is the one that most people will admit to. Clowns is another. What about the fear of falling over? Mina, my producer, that's her phobia. I have a little bit of that as well. My phobia is rats. I mean, just saying the word makes me completely shudder. What about you, and how do you get over a phobia?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Donald Trump said airstrikes were launched at the so-called Islamic State group in northwest Nigeria after they were targeting and killing innocent Christians. Nigeria's foreign minister has called it a joint operation targeting terrorists, adding it has nothing to do with a particular religion. LBC's Helen Hodinot has the details.
Claims of a genocide against Nigeria's Christians have been circulating in some right-wing US circles for months, though violence monitoring groups say there's no evidence to suggest that Christians are being killed more than Muslims in Nigeria, which as a population is roughly evenly divided between followers of both religions. After threatening action last month, yesterday Donald Trump said US military had executed numerous perfect strikes against Islamist terrorists, with US Department of Defense posting a video appearing to show a rocket launch. Further strikes haven't been ruled out.
It's reported Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky will meet on Sunday for another round of talks to end the Russia-Ukraine war. Ukraine's president says a lot can happen between now and the new year after discussions with officials yesterday. The Kremlin says talks have taken place between Vladimir Putin's aide and US representatives. Devon and Cornwall police have urged people to avoid coastal swimming after two people went missing on Christmas Day. The search for them has been concluded after emergency crews were called to the beach at Budley Salterton yesterday morning. The cold weather is continuing into Boxing Day with a yellow health alert in place for parts of southwest England. The low temperatures mean it's more likely vulnerable people will need the NHS. The warning runs until tomorrow afternoon. And England's struggles with the bat continued on the opening day of the fourth Ashes test in Melbourne. The visitors were all out for 110 after dismissing Australia for 152. England bowler Josh Tung took 5 wickets.
It's been an amazing day of test match cricket on Boxing Day. Obviously coming to the ground here this morning and winning the toss and putting the Aussies into bat and obviously bowling them out for 150 odd. I thought we did an amazing job as a bowling unit. And obviously they've bowled well as well. It's obviously a pitch which is doing quite a bit. But yeah, we've got to come back tomorrow and do the same again what we did the first innings.
Australia were 4 without loss at close, a lead of 46. LBC weather, staying dry for many of us this Boxing Day afternoon with sunny spells, cloudier in the far northeast, central and southwest of England, with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Four minutes past 12 on LBC. I always like to cover new subjects because when you've been doing this for 15 years, yes, it really is 15 years, you sometimes talk about the same subjects over and over and over again. Brexit, Israel, Gaza, immigration, benefit reform, etc., etc. So when you see a news story or somebody write a column on a subject that you haven't come before, you leap on it. And that's what I've done this morning, because I was reading an article on the Guardian website. It doesn't actually have the name of the author, which is a bit annoying on the top of the article. But anyway, the headline is, "There's an itsy-bitsy fear I want to overcome. I will never be a fan, but can I at least be normal about spiders?" And that, I think, is probably the most common phobia that people have. I can't imagine many people are actually fans of spiders, but they do bring out the worst in some people. Insects generally, I think, probably fall into that category. But that's a rather common phobia. Another one is clowns. And I've never really understood that. Why do people have a phobia about clowns? Another one, my friend Dan, he was 23 stone, he's now 14 stone, having been on the Manjaro, but he has a terrible phobia of needles. And I mean, given that he is built like the proverbial brick outhouse, let me say, well saved, Ian, he just has to see a needle, a syringe or something, and he's out for the count. And every time he goes for a blood test in a doctor's surgery, he has to tell them that if he sees a syringe or something, he will faint, and then duly does. And I think that's another common one. So I've given you three fairly common ones. What about other phobias? I mean, there are plenty that are normal, but there are some that are just plain weird. Like I was saying, another friend of mine texted me to say he has a phobia of fingernail. And I'm assuming he means fingernail cuttings, because, I mean, they're not pleasant, are they? So the definition, I looked up the definition of the word phobia. Let me just bring it up on my computer screen here. And, of course, it's now got adverts all over it. Here we are. This is the Cambridge Dictionary. It says, a phobia is a type of anxiety disorder that involves an extreme fear of something. So that's the official definition. What do you have a fear of? 0345 6060 973. Let's not just have a succession of callers say, well, I have a fear of this, I have a fear of that. Let's try and explore why you have a fear of a particular thing and what you've done to try and overcome it. 0345 6060 973. Let's talk to Dr. Ellie Cannon, GP and columnist for the Mail on Sunday. Ellie, very good day to you. Happy Boxing Day.
And to you, Ian.
Now, do you personally have a phobia of anything?
I don't think I've got a phobia. I don't like flying, but I don't really think I have a phobia of it. So I would say no, I probably don't have any phobias.
And do you have patients who come to you and say, I have a phobia of X, Y and Z, and what can I do about it?
Absolutely. So the ones you've mentioned, I would say, are pretty common. So the sort of spiders or snakes or that type of thing. Obviously, fear of heights is very common. The needle phobia, of course, I come across a lot in practice. You haven't mentioned actually the more complex type of phobias people have. So, you know, people have something like agoraphobia, so they're afraid to go out. And one that I come across quite a lot is emetophobia. So people who are afraid of vomit and afraid of people vomiting, afraid of themselves vomiting.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah, that's quite common, actually, emetophobia. And people who are afraid of feeling sick themselves, afraid other people might be sick, that sort of thing. Yeah, you'll probably find quite a few people call in with emetophobia.
And what's the weirdest one you've ever had?
Oh, that's a good one. I like the one you mentioned, your fingernail one. That sounds quite odd. I don't know what would be the sort of strangest one. I mean, obviously, sometimes with phobias, they have come from experience. So people who've had a sort of difficult situation, let's say with a certain type of animal. I did actually once know a child who didn't like birthday, who had a phobia of, you mentioned clowns, but had a phobia of sort of birthday cakes, birthday candles, and the singing of happy birthday. That's quite disabling when you're in primary school and being invited to a lot of birthday parties.
I shouldn't laugh, I suppose, because
he grew out of it, actually.
Well,
he
thank
grew
goodness out for of that. It, but I mean, some phobias can lead people into very, very distressing situations, can't they, with their mental health?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they can be debilitating. They can prevent people sort of doing their everyday activities. Obviously, if you have agoraphobia and you're afraid to go out, of course, that's hugely disabling. And, you know, any phobia, as you mentioned, is a type of anxiety. So it can lead to those anxiety symptoms like nausea, sweating, feeling like you're having, you know, palpitations, your heart racing, shaking. It can be incredibly debilitating, absolutely.
So, I mean, forget individual phobias, but generally, as a GP, if somebody comes to you and says, look, I've got a phobia, it's really causing me anxiety, what can I do to combat it? What's the general advice?
Well, I think the general advice, which is the sort of first thing to say to people, is actually a lot of phobias can be treated quite successfully. So you've probably talked before on the programme about CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, and that's actually very effective for phobias, because you take the thought, the fear, the phobia, and you change, you're able to change with CBT the behavior that's associated with it. The other thing is that a lot of people do is when people sort of undertake what's called exposure therapy. So actually desensitizing yourself to whatever you're afraid of. So for example, you might start by, if you're afraid of spiders, let's say, you might start by looking at pictures of spiders, and then scale up to looking at videos of spiders, and then sort of look at spiders perhaps in the zoo, in a, you know, in the sort of insect room in a zoo and that sort of thing, desensitizing over a long period of time. But phobias, if you get the right mental health treatment, can actually really be treated in a lot of situations.
Because, of course, the word phobia, I think, to some people means something different. Like, we talk a lot about homophobia or Islamophobia, which, I mean, are not really the same type of phobia as we're talking about here, are they?
No, not at all. And actually, when we're talking about these sort of types of phobias, we're also sort of talking about different things, because things like being afraid of vomiting, like I said, or spiders, we would call that medically a simple phobia. Whereas something like I mentioned, agoraphobia or a social phobia, where you're afraid to go out, that's complex, and they tend to be sort of much more deep-rooted, and they tend to be sort of much more disabling, because obviously if you're afraid of one thing, although it's not a sort of long-term answer, one could avoid spiders a little bit outside of October, but you could avoid spiders, couldn't you, really? Or you could avoid doing those things. Whereas if you've got a phobia of going out or a social phobia, of course, that's very difficult to avoid. So it's going to be much more disabling, which is why it would be called a complex phobia.
I'll tell you what, I'm getting some fantastic ones coming in on the text
while we're talking.
I can't wait to discuss them. Ellie, thank you very much indeed. And thanks for coming on LBC throughout 2025. You're a valued member of the team, and have a great 2026. That's Dr. Ellie Cannon, the resident GP on the Mail on Sunday. Right, let's talk to Millie in Lancashire. Millie, hi, what would you like to tell me? I put the wrong fader up there. So incompetent. Well, start again.
Yeah, so I've got a very unusual phobia. I've never heard or met anybody else that's got it. But basically, I just don't like weight on the walls. I worry about, I won't let my husband put too many things on the walls, like heavy mirrors or anything like that. I don't like the wardrobes being too full of stuff, because I always worry about the floors collapsing. For example, I bought a new dinner set before Christmas. So we had like eight dinner plates, eight bowls, eight of everything. And I'd only put four of each thing in the cupboard. And the other set was still up until Christmas Eve, still in a box. And my husband said, "This is ridiculous. They all need to go in the kitchen units." And he put them all away. And then I was stressing about the units collapsing, or the shelves giving way. And even things like, I worry about the weight of the cars on the roads. And I honestly don't know where this comes from. The only thing I can think of is when I was a young child, my uncle, I remember their bedroom ceiling collapsed.
Oh, well, that would do it.
But I just remember that as a vague memory. But it has got ridiculous because, yeah, I don't like my husband's got the garage full of stuff and he's got shelves all in there. And I just don't, it's just a weight phobia. And what? I just thought, when I heard your conversation, I thought, I wonder if there's anyone else that's got the same as me, because I've never met anybody else. And my husband just thinks it's completely irrational.
Well, I haven't heard of anyone else have that, but we have 45 minutes to go in the hour. And look, there's always someone else out there, Millie, and we'll try and find them to reassure you that you're not the only one. But I think you said something very important there, that a ceiling collapsed when you were a child. And I suspect with the majority of people that we're going to talk to over the next 45 minutes, that whatever phobia they have, I think it will probably lead back to some childhood experience. I'm not being amateur psychologist here, that's not my role, but I suspect that there's a lot in that.
Oh, I'll be interested to hear anyway. I'll keep listening.
I think you should. Millie, thank you very much indeed for being our first caller. As I say, lots of really interesting texts and WhatsApp messages coming in here. I'll go through those in a minute and take more of your calls. What is your phobia? Do you know why you suffer from it? And what have you done to try and combat it? 16 minutes past 12.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. Why? Because when you're working in a growing business, complexity
grows too.
So new QuickBooks AI gives you real-time cash flow visibility
to make the most of opportunities. It's amazing.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
At Nuffield Health, we're more than just a gym. We're a place to swim and a place to join in. We're a place to work out and a place to spin. We're a place to relax and take it all in. There are so many ways to enjoy being a member of Nuffield Health. With saunas, steam rooms, pools and hundreds of classes, we're more than just a gym. Get more from your membership. Join today at nuffieldhealth.com. Facilities vary. Check locally for details.
Badges are earned, not bought. I'm former Harlequins and England rugby captain Chris Robshaw, and I'm here to tell you the JQ7 has arrived.
The JQ7 has everything to prove. It proves the form with standout design and premium comfort, engineered for driving confidence every day. Discover the JQ7 for yourself. Find your closest JQ dealership online. Specification may vary. Range based on WLTP data, dependent on individual driving conditions.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
Ian Dale, call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
18 minutes past 12, we're talking about phobias. Liz says, I'm with you. Just speaking the word rats makes me shudder. Keith says, considering you're a conservative, I'm surprised you have a phobia of rats. Oh, it's the way you tell them, Keith. I also have a bit of a phobia of people called Keith. But there we go. Josh says, That wasn't very Christmassy of me, was it? No. Josh says, I have a terrible fear of tall buildings. It's not being in one. It's more being below one and looking up. I start to sweat. I feel dizzy and very anxious. I believe it's called batophobia. Well, I'm going to New York in April, and I hope I don't suffer from that, because I think that's probably the worst place to be. But I know what you mean, though, because sometimes you look at some of these really tall skyscrapers, which they're very tall, but not very wide across, and you think, well, if there's a big gust of wind, it'd fall over. So I have a little bit of sympathy with you on that one. Lewis says, phobias, public speaking. I accidentally came up with a good idea at work, which was applicable across the whole organisation. A series of training programmes I'd be leading on were coming my way, so I stalled and found a new job to avoid it. Oh, my God, that's awful, though, isn't it? P.S., I did send this on WhatsApp as well. Sorry if it's anyway, that's an admin thing. Right, let's go to Brendan, who's in Droitwich Spa. Hello, Brendan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What would you like to say?
Well, two things. One, I'll correct your definition of a phobia. It's an irrational failure. You know, you don't like them.
Well, I just gave out the Cambridge Dictionary version. Who am I to question that?
Well, it's changed then, because it used to be irrational. Any case, not a phobia. I used to have a pet, if you could describe it as a pet, spider, which I used to anaesthetise to do macro photography. And I had it for about 4 years.
You what? And, you anaesthetised it?
Yes.
How do you do that?
I put it in a big toffee jar with a gauze bottom, you know, just gently put it in, put a few drops of ether in it. When it went to sleep, got it out again, put it where I wanted it, take some photographs.
I'm sure there's a law against that.
I'm taking photographs of its legs and things like that. But I have a, I fly an aeroplane. I have a, not an irrational phobia about heights. Like, recently I had to walk across a bridge which was made of rope. Over a gorge that took a drop of 200 feet into a crocodile-infested river. So there's a folding field, the crocodiles would eat you. Well, the crocodiles would eat you in any case. So, but that wasn't irrational to me. It was, I don't want to go over the bridge.
No, I think that's a good one. I think many people would suffer from that. Brendan, thank you. The NHS definition of a phobia is this. A phobia is an overwhelming and debilitating fear of an object, place, situation, feeling, or animal. So there's nothing about irrationality there. I don't think it has to be irrational. Let's go to Sarah, who is in Portugal. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say? Now, it says you're in a place called Chaos. Is that right?
Yes. Well, it's pronounced Chaos, but yes, it's spelled Chaos. I live in chaos.
Marvellous. Well, I do most of the time, particularly when I'm on the radio. What would you like to tell me?
I'm actually a remedial hypnotist, and I work with phobias. And basically, you are born with two phobias, just or two inherent fears, the fear of being dropped and the fear of loud noises. So anything else that you pick up, any fear that you think you've had all your life, you've learnt it somewhere along the line, probably from a parent or a situation, or but there's some little part of your subconscious which is... has developed that fear and is using it to protect you from whatever it is that you believe to be dangerous.
When I was about 4 or 5 years old, I had a fear of an aeroplane flying through my bedroom window. And every night I would have this fear and I'd go rushing into my parents' bedroom in tears. And after a few months, they worked out that the reason I had this fear was because my grandmother was asleep in the next door bedroom, so effectively 9 inches from my head through the wall, and she was snoring.
It sounded like a plane.
I mean that could have had a long lasting effect on me. I don't have a fear of planes, but it could have done.
Yeah. I was going to say, did you watch Airplane when you were younger? Remember the airplane coming through the windows in the airport? But yeah, it's things like that. When you, exactly. When you're young, you don't have the ability to figure out, say, okay, this doesn't make sense. This is not logical. You just absorb all this information, and you can absorb a fear from, you know, if your grandmother screamed when she saw a spider. Young you would go, okay, that's the appropriate response to spiders.
Yeah.
They are scary. That's why so many people have that fear. And it stays with them, even when they know as adults that spiders can't hurt them, and it is irrational, it's still there. But it is possible to deal with them. And quickly.
And this fear of mice as well. Rats, I mean, I don't like rats. I lived on a farm, so I encountered rats all the time. And they really freak me out. But mice, I mean, why on earth would someone be afraid of a mouse?
It moves quickly, and they are seen as being dirty. They're vermin. They're seen as vermin. I mean, I live on a farm, so yeah, we have mice as well. So I quite like them. We relocate them with some food and water to a place up the road.
I'm sure the place up the road is grateful. Sarah, thank you. Simon says, I have a phobia of dry sponges, like the ones you wash up with or wash the car with. The sight of one makes me twitch and touching one makes me recoil. I can't bear it. My daughters think it's funny to chase me around the house with a dry sponge. Believe it or not, if the sponge is wet, I don't have a problem with it. Weird, I know. I'm special. I have heard of that phobia before. I don't think you're alone in that, Simon. Let's go to Margaret, who's in Biggleswade. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Ian. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to talk about phobias. I had a phobia of spiders. And it wasn't just a fear. It was a crippling fear. When I see pictures of them, see them on the television, my blood pressure used to go up through the roof. I'd sweat and hyperventilate. If I saw a film with spiders in or anything to do with spiders before I went to bed, I'd stay up a little bit later, changing the channel, putting music on, something else to distract me. But then when I went to bed, I could, in my head, could see them walking on the ceiling, walking on the bed. It was absolutely crippling, and it did spoil my life, but somebody recommended a hypnotherapist. Now, I went to see him, and he said that he wasn't there to tell me why it was. He's going to help me get over it. And he'd say, you'll find your own solution to why you're fighting the spiders. And he'd talk to you in a very calm voice, and he'd get you to go to sleep, think of a nice place. Well, it cost me money, which I didn't have. It was a little bit over my budget, but I did it because I said, I'm investing in myself to help myself. My goodness. He really built my confidence. I feel so much better for it. Now when I see a spider, I don't sort of think, oh, God, oh, my goodness, I can't touch it. But I can't go in the room because of the spider. I'll go in there and say, right, that's it. And I've even picked one up in the toilet paper to put it down the toilet and say, right, there you go. Or go, oh, there's a spider. And I feel so much better for it. And I see him around the town sometimes, and he's lovely. And I said to him, thank you so much. You've built my confidence. You really sort of made a difference to my life. I feel better with things. I feel better around people as well. And I couldn't wish for a better person, but all because of a spider. And they said that the reason I had a problem, it wasn't spiders, I had a problem with something in my past, which I worked out what it was. And I said, yeah, I think I know what it is, but I couldn't thank him more. And I actually recommended him to a couple of other people that had fears and phobias. And I said, if it worked for me, it will work for you. I strongly recommend you go and talk to him about it. But it so, just got rid of me.
So if a spider walked across the carpet while you were having this conversation with me, it wouldn't freak you out at all?
No, it wouldn't, not at all.
Well, see, it shows that it can be conquered then.
It can, absolutely.
What?
Absolutely. I'm not saying I'd like to have a spider as a pet, but it wouldn't bother me if they were walking across the carpet. I mean, I've had a couple in my bedroom, and I just said, oh, there's a spider. I went, all right, spider. And I talked to the spider. It might sound a bit strange, but I talked to it, so I can keep my calm. And I just said, right, out you go. And I got a piece of something and opened my back door, put the spider out and said, you can crawl outside and let them go. And it doesn't bother me anymore at all. And I tried to help other people that I know that are frightened of spiders. And they said, think about it. Just think it out. And
well, they said, thank you very much, Margaret. Good to hear that you no longer have a fear of spiders. I'll tell you what, there's some corkers coming in on the text here. There's one, I have a fear of werewolves. We'll come to that after the news. But first, let's go to Janice in Paisley. Hello, Janice.
Hello there.
Hi. Hey. What's your phobia?
Pantomime.
Oh, no, it isn't. Oh, dear. Have you rung off now I've said that?
Sorry?
I jokingly said, oh, no, it isn't, Janice. And I thought, because there was silence, I thought that might have freaked you out and you might have rung off.
It did, a wee bit.
So what is
it
about pantomimes?
I really don't know why, and I thought I'd phone in to see if anyone else has it, because it's quite unusual.
I have to say, I've never heard of that one before, but so, I mean, you've obviously been to one, otherwise you couldn't be freaked out by them.
No, I went to them when I was young. But I have a grandson, and he always wants me to go, and I can't. I have the flu, by the way. That's why I'm talking a bit funny.
No, well, the same here. I think my voice is a bit deeper than usual because I've got a bit of a cold at the moment. But I feel fine. Janice, thank you very much indeed. Right, keep your calls coming. We're very keen to hear about your phobias. And how do you overcome a phobia? Now, Margaret had hypnotherapy to overcome hers. It worked for her. Have you decided to go down that road? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. It's 12:30 on LBC. Let's get the news headlines from Emily Lang.
The US has warned of further strikes after a powerful and deadly attack against the so-called Islamic State in Nigeria. Donald Trump said the group had been targeting innocent Christians. It's reported Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky will meet on Sunday for another round of talks to end the Russia-Ukraine war. Ukraine's president says a lot can happen between now and the new year after discussions with officials yesterday. And police in Devon are asking people not to go in the sea after two people went missing on Christmas Day. Emergency services have called off their search after reports of a number of people getting into difficulty. LBC weather staying dry for many of us this Boxing Day afternoon with sunny spells, cloudier in the far northeast, central and southwest of England with a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is my car.
Well, I saw it first.
I sat in it first.
You horrible man.
Ow!
At Harwoods, we think January sales should be civilised. That's why there's money off every new and approved used car until the 11th of January. Simply stroll to Harwoods Jaguar and Land Rover Crawley and Brighton, Harwoods Volvo Crawley or Harwoods Audi Five Oaks and Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. The civilised January sale at Harwoods.
At Nuffield Health, we're more than just a gym. We're a place to swim and a place to join in. We're a place to work out and a place to spin. We're a place to relax and take it all in. There are so many ways to enjoy being a member of Nuffield Health. With saunas, steam rooms, pools and hundreds of classes, we're more than just a gym. Get more from your membership. Join today at nuffieldhealth.com. Facilities vary. Check locally for details.
At Boots, we've got more beauty than you might expect. Like the Laneige Hot Cocoa Lip Sleeping Mask, the Dyson Air Straight Dryer and Straighteners, the Gucci Gorgeous Gardenia Intense Odor Parfum, the Bubble Sparkly Slam Dunk Moisturiser, and made by Mitchell, Fenty, Benefit, Estee Lauder, not to mention number 7. Ooh! So whether it's the latest beauty trend or a time-tested classic, make more room for beauty at your nearest Boots Beauty Hall. Boots, with you for life. Subject to availability online and in selected stores.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:33 on LBC. We're talking about phobias and how to overcome them. Claire says, I have a phobia of snakes. It's called ophidiophobia and being sick, metaphobia. I can't watch snakes even on TV and have tried to get over it, but I've now given up. Metaphobia while bringing up children was very difficult, but luckily they weren't sucky children. Not sure that, I think that might be a typo there. I don't know what that word means. Anyway, now I told you about the person who has a fear of werewolves. Well, we've rang him back from WhatsApp because I can't wait to hear this. It's Simon in Croydon. Simon, spill the beans.
Hello there. Nice to speak to you. Yeah, I mean, it arose because I saw an American werewolf in London as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was always terrified of them. You know, obviously they don't exist, or no one's ever seen one. So yeah, I used to come back to work very, very dark in the winter. There's some small woods just from the bus stop to my home. And yeah, I was walking through there one night, pitch black, and I heard howling. And I just had to run home. And then when I got home, I realised there was a dog kennels near my house. And that's where it was coming from.
You see, I'm so tempted, Simon, to do an but I don't want to frighten you. Please tell me you haven't gone. He's gone. What have I done? Is he gen? Are you there, Simon? Oh, God. Okay. Now, how do I justify doing that then? I'm looking at my producer thinking, oh my God, I think you need to phone him back just to make sure he's okay. Swiftly moving on, let's go to Gillian in Bromley. Hello, Gillian.
Hello, hello.
Hello, what would you like to say?
Well, I'll start at the beginning. I've been waiting a while, so I've been thinking about what I might say to you. And it begins when I was born, because I'm sure I was breastfed. I was born just before the war, so I'm in my late 80s now. I was breastfed and then bottle fed. And I loved my bottle intensely. And one day my mother made the decision I was too old. I must drink out of a cup. And I was absolutely shocked to the gills by this. And I've never drunk out of a cup or anything like that since. I've been rejecting them all my life, which has had some difficulties. I drink water mainly. I like milk, of course, going back to my childhood. But hot drinks, never. Sight of them, smell of them, awful.
I'm the same as you.
I entertained a friend. Oh, sorry, what did you say?
I'm the same as you. I don't drink hot drinks either.
I entertained a friend a few weeks ago, and I gave him, he made tea in a teapot, and it took me 3 days to empty the teapot and face the ghastly wet tea bags. I don't know what it's like to enjoy a hot drink or be soothed by one. Is it a phobia or is it something stronger? I don't know, but I know that it would be desperate circumstances if somebody tried to force me to drink a cup of tea.
I'm exactly the same as you, but it's mainly because my mother didn't drink hot drinks, so she never really gave them to us. And obviously I've tried tea and coffee, but I just think they taste disgusting. So I don't think that's a phobia, Gillian, to be honest, but interesting nonetheless. Paul says, I used to have a fear of werewolves, but I'm all right now. Tony's in Axminster. Hello, Tony.
Oh, good morning. Lovely to speak to you.
Hi.
Very, very quickly, before I get on to my point, one of your callers before me, fear of spiders. And I remember a good few years ago on the Larry Grayson show, he had a contestant and her pet fear was spiders. And Larry
shut that
at her,
door.
Larry looked at her and said, I know exactly what you mean. Eight legs, I can't watch ABBA. But that tickled me. But seriously, Ian, when I was about 8 years old, I was in the school playground on a Saturday morning, waiting for my friends to come in to play football. There was a young window cleaner. It was a very old school concrete at the bottom. And young window cleaner was at the top. I didn't take any notice. I walked up the road to see if my friends were coming. And when I come back, oh dear, the poor young man was just come off his ladder and he was just laying there on the concrete. I screamed. I ran outside and there was a middle-aged man. I grabbed him. I said, please. And he called police and ambulance. That's always lived with me. I can't cope with heights. Friends of mine here in Axminster, Seaton by the sea, just up the road, they've got a balcony on the seafront, three stories up. I can't even sit on that balcony.
I think the height phobia is a genuine one, which and. When I was young, I was never afraid of heights, but the older I get, the more I am.
I can see that, Ian.
I saw a thing on Instagram yesterday. There was this reel, I think it was made in Dubai, and it was on one of these hugely tall skyscrapers, and each of the flats had a little swimming pool attached to it, but it sort of like came out of the flat. So it was like almost in thin air, but obviously like stuck to the building. And these people were taking a picture of it. And I don't know whether this is an AI fake or what, but it absolutely freaked me out. I was on the train was it yesterday? No, it can't be yesterday because I was on the train yesterday. But anyway, they filmed, there were three people standing in this sort of mini swimming pool and suddenly a crack appeared on one of the sides of it. And then the crack split and the water came rushing out. It was like falling like 300 feet onto the ground and the people were hanging on for dear life. And oh my God, that really produced some anxiety.
It would do it. And very, very quickly, Ian, when my son, he's 23 now, but when my boy was about 10, we went to London for the day. And we went over the bridge there by the House of Commons. And they've got that, you'll have to help me here, they've got that great big wheel that goes in the air.
Yes.
Westminster Bridge,
the,
is it?
The London Eye.
That's it, thank you. And he wanted to go on there. And he was about 6 or 7. He stamped his feet because I was terrified. I just couldn't do it, Ian.
I think the secret there is go on it at night because it's somehow because it's all dark. You don't sort of see. You don't look down so much, and even if you do, you can't see an awful lot. So if you go back in the evening and go when it's dark. Yeah. Tony, thank you very much indeed. Mike says, any chance, Ian, you can show some empathy to the callers disclosing their phobias? Well, yes. If it's a genuinely frightening one, of course I have empathy with people, but I'm not going to have empathy with somebody who's afraid of werewolves. And I should say that Simon is fine and well. He hung up by accident. We have rung him back because I did wonder what had happened to him there. Christina says, Ian, I have a phobia of the dark. Any suggestions? Yep, switch the lights on. That's my... Sorry, now I'm going to be accused of not having empathy, aren't I? It's called a sense of humour. But I know I have a warped sense of humour. I'm used to that. Let's go to Maureen in Bushy. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, Ian. How nice to speak to you.
Hello. Nice to speak to you too.
I've got two children, brother and sister, and each of them have a phobia. So my grandson, who's 14, had a spider phobia. And I don't like spiders. So we went to London Zoo to the Friendly Spider Programme.
Okay.
And he's cured. He would go berserk if he saw a money spider. Now he can handle them and get rid of them and everything.
Well, it clearly worked.
It's amazing.
Then. But I mean that's almost cruel to take a child to a spider place, even though it's for a good reason.
Well, he was scared of going in, as was everybody that was there. But he was so excited when he came out. It was a wonderful day, really. I recommend it to anybody.
And that's at London Zoo?
London Zoo, the Friendly Spider Programme.
Well, they might get an uptick in business soon. Any others?
Yes, his sister has a button phobia.
A what?
A button. She's frightened of buttons. So she will not hug you or go near you if you've got a cardigan on with buttons or coat or whatever.
Zips?
No, she's fine with zips. I don't know where it comes from. But one of her teachers has got the same phobia. So it's not an unknown, but I don't know where it comes from.
That I haven't heard of that one before. That is an odd one, isn't it? There must have been,
it is odd.
She must have had some experience somewhere in her life that...
somewhere.
I mean, it's not something you'd make up, that, is it?
No. I mean, but it is a word, and I can never remember it. Ian, it is, if you look it up, you'll read all about it. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, because there are words for virtually every single phobia that
That's
exists,
true.
Aren't there? So usually ones that I couldn't pronounce.
Yes, well, this is one of them.
I'm going to look that up now. Maureen, thank you very much. Anthony in London says, Merry Christmas. That werewolf moment was one of the best bits of Christmas radio this year. So funny. Great stuff. I'll tell you what, I was actually genuinely thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? Have I freaked this guy out? Luckily, he's okay. But I bet our digital people put that out on the internet so people can enjoy it, enjoy my discomfort. Dan is in Boreham Wood. Hello, Dan.
Hi, my phobia is tortoises.
Now, why have I laughed there? Why do you have a fear of tortoises?
Well, the reason why I have a fear of tortoises is the same reason why you laugh. Nothing on God's green earth should move that slowly, and it's just creepy.
Is it creepy, or is it the fact that they've got a shell? Because I always think, how does the shell stick to the body?
I don't think it's super glue. So they're very, very slow, and then their neck moves out, and then they come out and bite. I remember being in a tropical country, and we were walking along a path, and there was a tortoise to the side of the path. Now, I could have walked past, and he wouldn't have even known I walked past, but I couldn't do it. I had to go off the path and walk the long way around. they're just too unusual. Now, I don't mind turtles. When I was scuba diving, they were, you know, I saw one. It was moving along very happily because they can, you know, they can swim at a reasonable pace. They don't have legs, so I don't know what that relevance is. But they move along at a reasonable pace, you know. But tortoises are, I mean, I guess a phobia is an irrational fear, so it has to be irrational, but it doesn't change the fact that they're creepy and unusual. Now, koalas, I've never had the pleasure of meeting a koala, but I might have the same fear. I've never met one, so I don't know.
They have an awful screech to them, koalas. I was watching yet again, as I'm doom-scrolling on Instagram on the train home, I saw one where a koala had got into somebody's front room in Australia, and it had climbed the Christmas tree and attached itself to the Christmas tree. So they called koala rescue or whatever. And so these people came and tried to extract it. And so they pulled it off the Christmas tree. And oh my God, the howling. It was awful.
They're, but I think that maybe it's because they're mammals. I find them quite cute.
Yeah, they look
like
cute.
A very docile animal. You know, so. But the screech, yeah, I mean, we all know the screech of a pig, so yeah. That doesn't scare me.
Well, you've awoken a little memory of mine, because I had a nickname at school of tortoise, because I had a long, thin neck, and I can remember the names of the boys that called me that. Nigel Cann, Nicholas Coote, if you're listening, I still hate you.
You're getting your own back.
Yes, exactly. Well, I can. Dan, thank you very much for that. Now, I have the word for the fear of buttons. Can I get this right first time? Kumpunophobia. Kumpunophobia. Steve Jobs apparently suffered from it as well. So does our news editor, Angela's mother. If you're listening, Angela's mother, this explains a lot. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Tom Swarbrick.
A year into Donald Trump's presidency, has he done more harm or good in 2025? And, of course, 12 months of, well, broken promises from the government. Has Keir Starmer let you down?
Tom Swarbrick at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico, or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives, or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes. Or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa. Or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. No, not Christmas. It's DFS winter sale time. With savings on a huge range of stylish sofas and beds, plus 4 years interest-free credit on everything. Let your bum find its thing in the DFS winter sale. Shake on down to a store near you. DFS, what's your thing?
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
It's 12:50 on LBC. We're talking about phobias. I won't give the name of this texter. He says, I don't want to speak about this because my husband doesn't know and he's sitting across from me. So all husbands that are sitting across from their wives, they're now going to think this is what she's got a phobia about. Anyway, I have a phobia of escalators, which has only come on over the past few years. And by coincidence, we haven't had to go anywhere where we've had to use one. I've no idea how I'll handle that when the situation does arise. He'll think I'm nuts. That's rather odd that you wouldn't actually tell him about that, I have to say. I'd have thought that was the sort of thing you would be able to share. My sister has a fear of lifts or elevators. Sammy is in Leeds. Hello, Sammy.
Hi there.
Hello.
So I have a fear, slash phobia, of like bubbles or the holes, anything that's porous, coral, beehives, nests, honeycomb, and the name for that, the actual diagnosis is as a phobia of it's like a combined, it comes under the umbrella term of trypophobia, or is it tryptophobia?
Right.
One of the two, I can't ever pronounce it correctly. I think it is trypophobia, yeah. So it's coral, like any sort of small holes that are close together, like different textures. I just get goosebumps. I feel internally, I just feel like I need to rush and have a hot shower. I just get filled with dread. It's just, it makes me feel disgusting if I look at it. Like, so an example of this is, like, I was at work and a colleague of mine, they were doing a presentation, and all of a sudden, just before it was about to start, this screen, like, you know, like you just leave it for a little while, you go to sleep, and they had the background of coral and underwater, and I absolutely freaked out. I was like, oh my God, there's no hazard warning here. I need to leave it. I cannot deal with this. And it was like, everybody just looked at me like as though I'd lost the plot. And it was just I didn't even know that was going to happen. It was just so sudden, and I just felt so embarrassed later on. And I was like, I don't know how to explain this, but it makes sense to me. It's not going to make sense to you, but this is valid. This was a genuine reaction, so please don't hate me.
So if you came with me to watch West Ham play and West Ham scored a goal and they started up the bubbles machines, you'd freak out?
Bubbles, I'm not as bad with, but anything that's close, like, say, you know, like small, small dot, dot, dot.
Honeycomb.
Small things like the apps of, even if say it's a nature program and they're just like beaky. I mean, I love honey, but I cannot look at a slab of honeycomb or somebody like a beekeeper pulling, like trying to extract
What about corn on the cob where you've eaten half of it?
No, I wouldn't touch it. I would not touch that thing. It was like, absolutely not. No way. I'll literally go the other way around. If, like, say, people have like hot corn or something like that, just the smell of it would trigger me, and I just don't want to go into that area. So I'd rather take a different route. I will go backwards.
You know, it's a shame we didn't start this phone in at 10 o'clock, because we'd have done it for the whole 3 hours, because I've got so many texts here that I won't have time to read out. Full switchboard of calls. Sammy, thank you very much. Very, very interesting. Andy says, I'm terrified of being questioned about my past. Please don't ask me when it started. Now, is that a joke, or is he being real about that? I don't know. Oliver's in Merton. Oliver, hi.
Hi. I was just calling in in regards to the woman that mentioned she had the weights phobia. I kind of have the same thing, but I've always thought it was more like a structural phobia. But
what do you mean?
When I like go upstairs in a building, I start envisaging the floor falling through, and I start overthinking the different structure and how the building's built. And yeah, it's a weird one. I also think of, like, the cars falling through the road, like the woman mentioned.
But you see, isn't that similar to somebody who's got a fear of flying? Because you just can't work out how aircraft can get off the ground. Because I don't have a fear of flying, but if the plane's just about to take off, sometimes now, and this has only happened as I've got older, I do start to think about this. And I mean, I don't do anything about it, obviously, because it's too late to get off the plane, even if I wanted to. But it's completely rational, though, the way you think on that. There's nothing irrational about it, is there?
That's what I think, but it drives my partner mad because I try to avoid certain places because I start saying the buildings. I've actually got a terrible fear of flying as well, though, so that would make sense.
Okay, Oliver, thank you very much. Malcolm's a first-time caller in Tamworth. Hello, Malcolm.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, what would you like to say?
Well, Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a phobia of the London Underground.
Is that because of the enclosed space?
No. It's because when I was a child, and I was born in the 1950s, when we used to go on the Underground, you used to feel the rush of the air, and then a train that come through, and it went, whew, and it was awful. And I'd stand in the corner, and I'd cry, because it was such a horrible sound.
See, I like that sound, because I know that a train's coming.
Well, yeah, I know. But it was always a phobia of mine, and I was born in the 1950s, and now I go fairly well to Paddock Wood, where you live, in Tunbridge,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, next station.
Yeah, and I have to get the job, and even now, and I'm 74, even now, that sound and that rush really makes me frightened, still to this day.
So you still go on the tube from what mainline station do you come into London from Staffordshire?
I think I get London Bridge.
Oh. Right.
London Bridge.
I think if I were you, I would get a black cab from whichever station you come into to Charing Cross if you're going to Paddock Wood. Malcolm, thank you very much indeed. Right, just time to squeeze in Ben in Wandsworth. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
I'll tell you, I have always had, since childhood, this irrational fear of roller coasters. I won't go near them. You couldn't pay me £1 million to sit on one. And I think it started when, and it's kind of one of those things, you go back in your head and you go, right, where did it start? I remember I was sort of 6 years old. It was just that, you know, when you get above the height to go on a roller coaster, I said, yeah, Alton Towers, I want to go on the biggest, stupidest one. Can't even remember what it was. And I just remember feeling so sort of cold and lost and sort of shaking afterwards. Like, I hated that whole sensation. And it's not like, you know, the speed or the heights. Now, I've not got a fear of heights or flying or anything like that. And I was like, I don't know why I felt like this. And then sort of 30 years later, I thought, oh, this is ridiculous now. Got to go on one. So literally, I thought, you know what? I'll pluck up the courage. You know, you're an adult now. Get over it. And I sat on one, and it is the first and only time I've had a panic attack in my life. And where it just sitting down and seeing the thing come over you, you know, to lock you in, I literally screamed at the attendant. I was like, no, not happening today. And it's one of those things. I'm just like, I don't know how to unpick this. You know, maybe it's just I don't need to go on a roller coaster. But it's one of those when you're out with friends or family and it's, you know, they're all having fun. I mean, look, I'm the best bag and coat holder in the world at the moment because that's my job at theme parks now. But
I am totally with you. I got freaked out by going on one at Clacton Pier when I was 10, and I've never been on one since and never will. Ben, thanks for being our last caller. Some great calls this morning. Thank you very much indeed for all of them. Coming up at 3 on LBC, it's Henry Ridley. But right now, settle in for Tom Swarbrick.
Thanks very much indeed. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Coming up this afternoon...
You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country.
It was the Oval Office meeting that shook the world. President Zelensky and Trump having it out in front of the world's press. What is the best way to handle Donald Trump? And has he done more harm than good in 2025? Also...
You're listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Bah!
You gotta love this guy, Big John, best known for boshing giant Chinese takeaways online. But what does Christmas look like with the Fisher family? He'll join me later in the show. And...
We took control of our future, and Britain is now back on track.
12 months on of Broken Promises by Sir Keir Starmer and his beleaguered Chancellor Rachel Reeves, topped off by the Omni-Shambles budget last month. After the news, has the government this year let you down?
On your radio, on the LBC app... And
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, America has launched strikes against militants linked to the Islamic State group in northwestern Nigeria. It's an area where they've been running training camps. Donald Trump has labelled the group terrorist scum, saying it's been targeting and viciously killing primarily innocent Christians. Robert Fox is defence editor of the Evening Standard. He's told LBC this action is part of a wider picture.
I think they've got very, very worried about the resurgence globally of IS, ISL, you name it. And the problem with Africa, and really Trump didn't want to focus on Africa, you can see that from his national security strategy, but is forced to because there is so much awful phrase, it's ungoverned space.
The Kremlin's confirmed talks have taken place by phone between Vladimir Putin's aide and US officials. It was agreed both sides will continue talking to try and find an end to the war in Ukraine. Ukraine's president also spoke with American officials yesterday, with reports that Volodymyr Zelensky is planning to meet Donald Trump in person in the coming days. Devon and Cornwall police have urged people to avoid coastal swimming after two people went missing on Christmas Day. The search for them was concluded last night after emergency crews were called to the beach at Budley Salterton yesterday morning. The cold weather is continuing into Boxing Day with a yellow health alert in place for parts of southwest England. The low temperatures mean it's more likely vulnerable people will need the NHS. The warning runs until tomorrow afternoon. And England's chaotic Ashes series has continued in Melbourne, where 20 wickets were taken on the first day of the fourth test. Australia were out for 152 before England fell for just 110 runs. It's the first time since 1909 that two innings have been completed on the opening day of an Ashes test. England bowler Josh Tung says it was an exciting start.
It's been an amazing day of test match cricket on Boxing Day. Obviously coming to the ground here this morning and winning the toss and putting the Aussies into bat and obviously bowling them out for 150-odd. I thought we did an amazing job as a bowling unit. And obviously they've bowled well as well. It's obviously a pitch which is doing quite a bit.
LBC weather staying dry for many of us this Boxing Day afternoon with sunny spells. Cloudier in the far northeast, central and southwest of England with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Emily Lang.
This is LBC. From Global, leading Britain's conversation with Tom Swarbrick.
And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to Boxing Day here on LBC. Tom Swarbrick to guide you through the next few hours on what is, without question, folks, the best day of the year. The rigmarole of Christmas has gone, the presents have been opened, discarded, with the wrapping paper thrown away, and now all that is left is to chow down on some leftovers, enjoy what's on the telly, and, of course, listen to us here on LBC. It's great to have your company this afternoon. We've got so much to talk about over the course of the next couple of hours. We'll run you through what has happened and what is likely to happen in 2026 on t'other side of the Atlantic. We'll talk about some of the viral moments, both on the programme and elsewhere. I'll speak to Ian Dale about how he beats the Christmas flab by having a weight loss jab. But first,
this is no time for dividers. This is the time for bringing the whole country together.
And how's that gone, Sir Keir? After the landslide election win only 18 months ago, 2025 has been somewhat torrid for the Prime Minister and his team, leading to the question of whether or not this time next year, Keir will still be here. I'm joined by the two people who have watched the unfolding of the Labour government more closely than most, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark and our political correspondent Aggie Chambray. Thank you both so much for being here this Boxing Day. It's very good
Such
to see you both.
Such a pleasure. Happy Boxing
Day. Happy Boxing Day.
Happy Boxing Day.
Unto the both of you. Is it a Happy New Year for Sir Keir for 2026, Natasha?
No, of course not. Look, I remember I was sort of looking back at the year and I remember this time last year when LBC did some polling about Keir Starmer, how popular he was, how frustrated people were with the pace of change and what they were thinking going into 2025. And that, I think, it felt like we were a little bit ahead of the curve when we were sort of talking to people, you know, regular, normal people, callers that call into LBC day in, day out, who felt like they were fed up already with the Prime Minister. It's felt like it's taken potentially the media and all of us lot a little while to catch up with what has been being said in people's living rooms, on buses, in pubs for a year now. And I think he is going to be going into the most difficult year of his premiership and of his leadership. You know, if he makes it to the end of 2026, there will be a lot of people, I think, in Westminster that will be surprised. He is going to be facing a constant pressure from his backbenchers, from his cabinet, from the public. And can he make it through the year? That is a question that I still feel is up for debate.
Which is amazing, really, that is such a prominent question not that long after such an enormous victory. But Aggie, I guess what has become clear over the course of 2025 is, yes, the victory was big, but the support was actually really shallow.
The support was really, really shallow. And in some ways, Keir Starmer was untested as a leader, and the Labour Party was reasonably untested in government. They hadn't been in government for 14 years. And they have made, the Prime Minister has been at the top of government, but they have made a number of unforced errors this year, which I think people are absolutely furious about. And it seems almost ridiculous to talk about the fact, and people are talking about it constantly in Westminster, but talking about the fact that he may not be Prime Minister, Labour leader at the end of next year. But it is because of all of those unforced errors, and it is fundamentally because all of those Labour MPs who won their seats last year are basically concerned that if Keir Starmer is still Labour leader at the next general election, they will lose their seats.
Huge sways
them.
So, I mean, there are quite a lot of examples, and frankly, as they say, a week is a long time of politics, a year is an absolute epoch. So casting minds back might be quite tricky. But what would you say are the one or two major errors that have been made this year that has led to some of this opprobrium, not just from the public, but actually from his own cabinet ministers, Natasha?
Yeah, I think I would definitely say the attempts to cut benefits. I don't think there has been ever any more of a mishandling of a situation than Keir Starmer handled that. And I remember speaking to him at the NATO summit days before that vote was due to take place. It was evident that either he or people in Number 10 were not aware of the scale of the problem. They really thought that they were able to push that through. And I was just so struck by listening to him about how, you know, sort of tin-eared he seemed. And I just, you know, was putting it to him, do you not understand the scale of the rebellion you were about to face? And they didn't. And until the last moment, they decided to press ahead with that vote. And I think that has been his biggest mistake, because arguably that U-turn has emboldened MPs so much. And now we are all constantly looking for where the next rebellion is going to come. And it will come.
And yet, Aggie, that welfare reform, yes, it was £5 billion off welfare a year, but in the grand scheme of welfare spending, that's not a massive amount. He has an enormous majority in Parliament. How did they misread it so badly?
I think they misread it so badly because they talked constantly about that £5 billion. They talked about the fact that they needed to reform it because welfare, the amount we spend on welfare as a country, is escalating. And that is absolutely true.
Yep.
But then they were trying to take away welfare from people who, and this is what Labour MPs found really difficult, from some people who couldn't wash themselves. And I think lots of Labour MPs, that's an example, but found that really, really difficult. And they talked a lot about the money. And Labour MPs who I spoke to would say, we didn't get into government to take away money from people who can't wash themselves below the waist.
Is he more right-wing than his party, do you think?
I think the problem is, I actually have no idea.
This is the point. I agree.
I think the problem is, and that is what has gone down so badly with Labour MPs and with the public as well, people just simply don't know what he stands for. So on that point, there wasn't a political argument made for it. Other things that have happened throughout the year that have been so damaging for him was him standing up in front of the country, making this big speech in Number 10, where he talked about the risk of becoming an island of strangers. And then said a few weeks later, oh, hang on, I didn't mean that. I regret using that language. And then did another interview where he said, no, but the sentiment was right. And everyone's left completely baffled.
He can't agree with himself.
No.
On what is one of the biggest issues to voters that matters, rightly or wrongly, that is one of the big issues that matters. And